members, Kimelang, Moreni. Let me welcome everyone after a very hectic 2 weeks constituency period. I wish I could take a 2 days leave or a full week leave. I welcome also the whole team from the Department of Cooperative Government and Traditional Affairs, as well as the Minister. Today we are meeting as a continuation of what we started a couple of weeks ago, where we were contemplating, started in February, where the Department of Energy presented or briefed the committee on free basic electricity and basic alternative energy. And at that time, both COPPA and SALGA, as well as Minister of the State, were not unable to make it. And I felt quite important on members that we do get at some stage the three institutions come and brief us on what their roles are, what they've done up to now on these two issues. Very, very important. Much as we can talk about a sustainable supply of electricity, but one of the most fundamental issues is affordable supply of electricity or affordable access. But an expanded definition of that affordable access also includes the indigent. It's quite a contentious issue, quite a sensitive issue, but at the same time, when addressed appropriately, it makes a smile because it ensures that we are a caring government or a part of a caring state. Because not only do we look after those who pay for their electricity, but we look after those who, because of their dire socioeconomic status, are unable to. Obviously, I'm not going to go through all the issues that you handle, but I would like you to share that with us as much as you can. I know that we did send a few things that we might want you to highlight, but I hope you did not make a presentation on that basis only, but it was just add-ons. One of the things that we are interested to have a sense is that how do those two services, free basic electricity and free basic alternative energy, how do they integrate and relate to the concept and practice of free basic services? Because we also work on the ground and at times of interest to see how the ordinary people view FBE in relation to free basic services. So I hope you will be able to take us through that today to the best of your ability. Let me not take further time. Please to say that. Can we get apologies now?
Thank you, Chairperson. The following apologies. Mr. Adebe, who's on sick leave. Mr. Fred, who's currently in Johannesburg. And then Honorable Ferguson, who's attending the portfolio committee on water and environmental affairs. We are dealing with the station chair. And then Mr. Holoka also requested to leave at 10:30.
Yes, that is we do need an auditor general. No matter how good we can be, but at the end of the day, we need that lady or gentleman who will cut the meat. He cut it, no, not better to everyone. Yeah, now the fire in the end of it. So them lot of, as you would definitely know, who only hope for the best, you know, someone who could even be better, if possible, than cutting on them. Because his footprints are very, very clear. I hope they were also quite clear that the Osman, notwithstanding that he has made a lot of enemies, but he made a lot of friends as well. As even the first time was that general. Okay, honorable members, without any waste of time, you might be keen to have some time to engage with the presentation. Shall I hand over to Cocteau now to make the presentation? But please, you seem to have come up in full force. If we just take a few minutes to introduce your themes.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning to you and honorable members. Indeed, we've come out in full force. It is both an opportunity for the whole team to engage with the honorable members. And we indeed always take such an opportunity seriously. Honorable Chairperson, I think it's appropriate to start by just apologizing on behalf of the Minister and the Deputy Minister. Unfortunately, they are held up in cabinet subcommittees. But also, if I could also convey an apology from the Director General of Cooperative Governance, who is also caught up in Pretoria with the shortlisting process for the members of the Municipal Demarcation Board. My name is Ongama Mahlawe. I'm the acting CEO of MISA, the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agent, which is a government component of COPTA. We have a whole COPTA family here, even some representatives from the ministry, led by the Chief of Staff, Mr. Paul Davids, seated 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, was down the line. We also have Mr. Chris Malihade from the Department of Cooperative Governance, who will be making the presentation on behalf of the department. He is the senior manager responsible for free basic services. I know that there are also some officials from the DG office the lady in the front row. She's from the DG's office. In the front, I know that sometimes the colleagues say that I misspell mispronounce their names. I want to prove them wrong today. I know them well, and I know how to pronounce their names. In the front, I think the gentleman first gentleman is Mr. Temba Daza. Temba is responsible for municipal technical support. He's the head of that unit. Next to Temba is Mr. Siabong Dube. Excuse me. He's the acting CFO of MISA. And next to Siabong Dube is Ms. Liza Gatoneni. She's the project manager in the office of the CEO. Next to Ms. Liza Gatoneni is Mr. Victor Matata. He is responsible for, you know, all processes, business processes within MISA, including liaison with Parliament. Next to Mr. Victor Matata is Mr. Mike Church. Mr. Mike Church is an engineer by profession, and he is responsible for special projects within MISA. Next to Mr. Mike Church is Mr. Zakele Nai. He is the head of capacity building within MISA. I have already introduced Tebukheng. I just the surname Tebukheng, please pardon me. she is in the head teacher's office. Just remind us the name. Ndoli. That's right. And then next to her is Mr. Faiz Jacobs. He's the provincial program manager responsible for Western Cape and Northern Cape. And next to him is Mr. Ndanda Zubimba, who is responsible for vendor services, legal and contract management. And next to Mr. Ndanda Zubimba is Mr. Shepard Kasipa, who is responsible for energy and for the energy sector. And next to me is Mr. Kwadelane Poloko. Did I say it right? he would make a presentation on behalf of MISA. He will pronounce it, then you will get, see for yourself, Jefferson, if I didn't get it right. Because no matter how much I try, he always tells me I got it wrong. But I call him Kwadelane Poloko. Kwadelane is the head of all sectoral support, including energy, water services, sanitation, and sanitation as well as refuse removal. But he's also responsible for the support that we provide in terms of grants, you know, ensuring that municipalities spend on their grants. That's Mr. Poloko. Next to Mr. Poloko is DDG Ricardo Hansby. Mr. Hansby used to be responsible for infrastructure and economic development within the company. And now he is assisting MISA to ensure that we roll out our infrastructure programs, but also bringing in the economic development aspect within our work. I think there is Lebohang Tegane, who I assume that the honorable members are more familiar with. He's the parliamentary liaison officer within the ministry. I think that is the team from Hongta. If you allow me, Chairperson, the best presentation will be made by Mr. Chris Malihase, and that will be the presentation that focuses on mainly on three basic services. And then after Mr. Malihase, we'll have Mr. Poloko making a presentation on behalf of MISA. Thank you, Chairperson.
Program Director, Honorable Members of Parliament, I would like to take this opportunity to thank you all for giving us this opportunity to come and present to you the issues around three basic services policy and our aid to intelligent research and all other issues that were requested by the portfolio. Let me just repeat my name to put it on record, because I know that Ongama misspelled something, so I want to make sure that I am actually known by the correct name. My name is Chris Malehase, and indeed, as it has been mentioned by my colleague Ongama Masawe, I am presenting on behalf of the Department of the Corporate Governance. Honorable Program Director, indeed we have received the queries from this portfolio, and we have since responded by putting together this presentation. My presentation, specifically Program Director and Honorable Members of Parliament,
I'm the chairperson of the committee.
Chairperson.
Yes, President, I really appreciate the correction. These are some of the dynamics when you find yourself in a new territory, foreign to you. And I really appreciate it. Thank you very much, Chairperson. My presentation, Chairperson, is designed to give a quick overview of the immediate policy framework and the implementation guidelines. But what I will also do in this presentation, Honourable Chairperson, will be to try and unpack the challenges, implementation challenges faced by municipalities in the implementation of the free basic services incident policy. But in doing that, I will also make sure that I do not leave this house with questions hanging. I will also do my level best to put forward some of the solutions that we have to address all the impediments on this program. Honourable Chairperson, as an overview to the free basic services incident policy, let Council allow me to indicate and remind all of us that the implementation of the free basic services program is actually a government policy which was adopted in the year 2000. And the legal basis for this program is the constitution, the highest law in the land, the constitution of the republic. It provides the legal basis for the provision of this program. But interesting, Honourable Chairperson, will be the space that we occupied in the Department of Cooperative Governance after the commitment was made in 2000. In 2004 and 2005, we moved in to develop the framework, Free Basic Services Incident Policy Framework, which will provide the foundation upon which all the municipalities in the country will be able to develop their own tailor-made incident policies so that they can be able to provide free basic services. And all this, of course, must be aligned to the national incident guidelines which we also developed. Honourable Chairperson, subsequent to the development of the free basic services implementation policy framework, we then in 2006-2007, developed guidelines to provide for the process to employ when implementing free basic services program. Guidelines were very, very clear in terms of making sure that indeed the policy is implemented. Specific focus on the incident implementation guideline is given to the whole question around the criteria that the municipalities needed to think about when they select incidents. That was done purposefully, especially in the absence of the poverty line in this country. The guideline unpacked the whole process around the criteria that municipalities could consider. There is also a special focus around the issue of registration processes that municipalities can employ. How indigenous should be screened for the approval and disapproval processes. It also covers critical issues around monitoring of the provision of services and impact determination. There are also issues around exit planning for the incident. In those few remarks, Honourable Chairperson, I would like to also remind all of us that free basic services program entails, therefore, a bucket of services that targets the poor. And those services are for free basic water, free basic sanitation, free basic waste removal, as well as free basic energy, which also includes free basic alternative energy. It is very, very important for us to keep this in mind. So in other words, if one were to remove one of those services from the basket, the free basic services program remains incomplete. It defeats the purpose of the position that was taken by our government in 2000, where they made it very clear to all of us to say, present, go and roll out the program, free basic services program, which will include the basket of those services. So that already is beginning to talk to the interpretation, Chairperson, that you alluded to in your opening remarks. It is also important for us to also remember that there is only one free basic services indigenous policy framework. This is the policy that we developed as a department which guides municipalities in terms of how they need or should identify indigenous. All the services that I have mentioned, they are implemented, they are rolled out in line with that national policy framework. So it means, therefore, that you will not have free basic energy without free basic services policy framework. Free basic energy is run out to the indigenous, and these Indians are identified by their municipalities, making use of the Indigenous Free Services policy which we have developed. And that also speaks to the introduction of free basic energy to the free basic services program. Also, Honorable Chairperson, I also need to highlight the fact that there is a subsidy dedicated to subsidize the Indians on this program. And here, Honorable Chairperson, I am talking specifically about the equitable share. This equitable share is allocated to all the municipalities in this country by my department for the subsidization of the Indians. And therefore, that as well speaks to the integration. Free basic energy cannot be moved out of the equation, because otherwise then it will not be free basic energy anymore. I just wanted to spend time on that, Honorable Chairperson, just reflecting some of the critical elements that actually speak to the integration of free basic services policy as well as free basic energy. This slide, Honorable Chairperson, is just to bring to the attention of the members of the House and the equitable share, just a quick reflection, the indigenous subsidy. Most important to note, Honorable Chairperson, is the very last point there, which speaks to the affordability threshold of 2,300. This came about as a result of the revised equitable share. And it set an amount that is equivalent to twice the monthly old age grant. It is quite a quantum leap change indeed. Honorable Chairperson, you will remember that when we first implemented free basic services program in 2001, starting with free basic energy, the affordability threshold was set at 800, and that threshold was used until lately. Now, this is a new threshold that has been revised during 2011-2012 financial year. And what it means is that this is the cap. Actually, it advocates for the definition of indigenous in our municipalities. We've got to look at it this way. The total combined household income has to be at least 2,300 or less. When it is like that, that household is actually considered indigenous. There is a whole range of other criteria that will also be looked in relation to that. But this is the criteria at the threshold that has been set to say every one household whose total household combined income is 2,300 and less should not be excluded from benefiting from this program. And therefore, the first bullet, the basic services component, funds 277. This is in relation to the 2011 price of course, but without really much into the issues of the formula itself. The provision of basic services for poor household. The component there, broken down, bullet number two, Honorable Chairperson, you can see what is allocated for free basic water, what is allocated for free basic sanitation, energy, as well as refuse removal. I just thought I needed to fly to this slide so that there's better understanding as we move forward. Honorable Chairperson, before I venture into critical issues around challenges and solutions, let me just spend a minute reflecting on some of the achievements that we have achieved as a department since its inception until 2009. And it should be notable. I will explain this as I continue with my presentation, Honorable Chairperson, until 2009. Critical issues that we did, of course, is the policy framework, which I've already indicated, the guidelines which we have developed to implement the policy itself, portal system, which was also launched at a conference, national conference, which was organized by our department. But also, we developed free basic services monitoring and reporting system in this program. Very interesting also is the framework for the developing qualifying criteria for municipal indigenous policies. Having realized that it is not as easy as we initially thought to really just apply the guideline on its own, municipalities had serious changes in terms of drilling things down to the lowest level around the criteria. We decided to embark in a process to come up with a study dedicated on assisting municipalities what exactly do they need to do to come up with the criteria that will assist them to define indigenous households. And of course, this is done on the basis of the fact that we have a challenge in this problem. There is no agreed poverty line in this country, which is why it remains to be it remains in the hands of the municipalities themselves to try and define who indigenous households are on the basis of their own local circumstances. There is no common standard. So what it means in simpler terms, Jefferson, is that the definition how indigenous are defined in municipality A may not necessarily be the same as how indigenous are defined in the next municipality. That is critical to note. One other thing which we have done, Honorable Chairperson, is to develop the communication strategy to make sure that we don't give things to chances to assist this municipality to communicate this program as widely as possible. There was also a study to determine the cost of providing FBS, and that work, I'm sure it will be noted by the members of the House that SALG apparently is taking forward that work. In fact, they are working towards concluding this issue as well. But the last one, basic services publication, it was one of the most significant milestones in this project, where we were trying to consolidate and harness all issues, complications around reporting. This was done to make sure that we streamline reporting in such a manner that there will be no duplication across all the sector departments. This publication, at some stage, it was presented here in Parliament, and there were appreciation on this matter. Honorable Chairperson, what I have done, this is just to give you an indication on the National Status of Indigenous Register. This is borrowed information. I have borrowed this information from Statistics South Africa. This is the only latest information available. Annual Census Survey in June. You will remember that they have just released this data on the 28th, officially on the 28th of August. Now, in terms of this information, Honorable Chairperson, there are 225 municipalities which have got indigenous register. But members of the House should also remember that it is not necessarily a must that all municipalities should develop indigenous registers. It is all dependent on whether they have got powers and functions to provide basic services. This is the information to the level, to the best of their ability, Honorable Chairperson. I know that there may be issues around here. I requested data up to unit level to want to see which ones are district, which ones are local, and all of that. But unfortunately, given time constraints at the time at which we received this query from this portfolio, Statistics South Africa was unable to draw that data. But at least it gives us the picture to be able to see what is happening. So you can see municipalities have put something. If there is a critical question to be asked around this, Honorable Chairperson, most probably it will be around the question of credibility around this indigenous register. And I know that they are very, very serious questions. I will talk to this as I continue with my presentation as to what are some of the measures that we are taking as a department to be able to address this dilemma. So municipalities do have indigenous register, most, but are they credible? Honorable Chairperson, allow me to also flag challenges. There are two types of challenges. We've got implementation challenges as well as coordination challenges. With regards to the difficulties encountered by our municipalities around implementation, our units are stressed around the whole issue around targeting methods to be used. It is not easy for them. It is easier in instances where some of these core municipalities have to really employ geographical targeting. But when it gets complicated, like for instance where you've got mixed structures where they have to really apply a targeting method, example such as the individual means tested subsidy, where they have to really interview the households and come to the conclusion. It is not easy. We have got seven targeting methods which we have unpacked in the guidelines, but we know that most of our units struggle around this issue. There's an issue around administering indigenous registers. It is a nightmare, and we have a solution. And I will reflect to the House how we're actually going to deal with that. Issues around monitoring and delivery, monitoring and delivery impact is also a problem. verification of beneficiary data is also a very difficult issue that municipalities are grappling with. Exit strategies are not clearly outlined. This is very, very critical, and we also have a solution around this issue. It should be remembered, honorable members of the House, that, and Chairperson, that we have been providing this, rolling out this program since 2001. And it has not been clearly demonstrated to our government as to which household must have been graduated out of this poverty quagmire. It has not been very, very clearly demonstrated. In fact, it has not been done. But it cannot be that as government pumping in money through equitable share and through other means, that our people, since the implementation of the program, remain the same. Surely there must be a lot that are graduating out of the system, but it is just a matter of the ministry not having a good hand at that as to what is it that they should do to really make sure that they are exited. And government gets to know, to demonstrate value for money and begin to talk to the issues around impact. Also the issue around the impact on the quality of life of beneficiaries, but cost limitation as well is a very, very critical issue, Honorable Chairperson. And municipalities, especially the poor municipalities, can only implement what they can afford. Here specifically, I am talking about municipalities that cannot be able to raise their own revenue. That are solely dependent on the subsidy, equitable share subsidy. It is a challenge. And in fact, as I interact with them, it turns out that most of the things that they are doing defeat the purpose of this program. I was in the Northern Cape last week. One very poor municipality, which I'm not going, to mention the name, indicated to me that, Chris, you see, we've got a problem. If as a municipality we start to do things as is expected by this government, some of our people need this development, they get appointed, they get jobs and all of that, but to remove them out of that Indian register is going to put us in a very, very difficult situation. I said, what? And they said to me, it will affect our equitable share allocation. I had goosebumps for a moment, and this is reality, which is actually even bigger than agenda. These are some of the issues that we policy-related issues that we have to grapple with as department. Now, you can see that we've got municipalities that are actually making sure this program turns out to be a generational program. It's not a generational program. It is very, very clear and reflected in the National Development Plan that where we see ourselves come 2030, we need to find ourselves in a position whereby all the poor have been brought back into the mainstream of the economy. And what that means to me as this is that the immediate registers of these municipalities must be zero. It's not about always increasing them, but we have to make sure that they development and they are graduated out of the ancient register. This is the vision of this country. So if you find municipalities that are so poor that are actually beginning to work things this way, which reflects negatively, by the way, on government, it is not good. But there are ways and means that we are putting together to be able to deal with some of these issues. Honorable Chairperson, there are issues, I've already alluded to the issue around definition, that this is a very, very difficult one. In the absence of the poverty line in this country, which, by the way, there were attempts way back in 2007, remember the state of the sauna and time, indicating that in 3 weeks' time it will be down. But this is no simple matter. That document, we all know that it went neglect and it never came out. There is something, of course, currently in the pipeline that the Department of National Treasury is trying to work on, but it disadvantages us in a big way, of course. We cannot be able to talk the definition of the poor uniformly in the country. For example, a quick one. If we are talking the threshold for the provision of free basic services with a threshold of 2,300, what happens to those that are referred to as poor in as far as the human settlement housing program, the RDP houses? You've got a threshold that is set at 3,500. So automatically, it kicks them out of this program. This becomes very, very difficult for us to be able to do things in a way that really we are able to look at the impact that we are making and applaud ourselves as government. So there are challenges, very, very serious challenges around the definition of Indian. Of course, another issue also is around defining what household is. I would like to also register a correction on this slide, Honourable Chairperson, that the reference that I've made on this slide is not necessarily correct. The annual census, that annual census right at the bottom, speaks only to the Indigenous Register 225, but the rest of the info on that slide belongs to us. That's to register that correction. Honourable Chairperson, it's not only about implementation challenges. There are serious coordination challenges across the three spheres of government, starting with us at national. To put it straight, when I met with my Director General and the top management team to deliberate on this presentation, we felt that we needed to really be very, very honest to this House and give facts as they are. This program, after the restructuring of the department in 2009, collapsed. It effectively collapsed. Yes, there is work which remains to be done in the department, but very minimal. When we put heads together, we felt that we cannot even begin to say to this portfolio that indeed the program was in existence. So that coordination from national actually collapsed. And I also reflected how it used to be composed. This is the structure that can actually always be very proud about the product that has indicated the achievement until 2009. Not only that, Honourable Chairperson, there's an issue around SBS facilitation by provinces. It is crisis. Some of the provinces do have functional civil services forums, but mostly they are dysfunctional or absent. I can point out here, you Chairperson, that we got Northwest and Eastern Cape, they have got fully functional civil services forum. Here I'm talking about forums where the province is able to bring on board all the stakeholders on the program to deliberate on critical issues, how things should be done, and all of that. You find those structures existing very, very well in Northwest and the Eastern Cape. It really doesn't matter if the existence of the structure, whether here they correlate to the actual delivery on the ground. We are not yet at that level, and I always believe that first thing first, it will get there, but it needs to be appreciated. Some of the provinces, they are very much sitting on the fence, but notable, Honourable Chairperson, those provinces which just do not have free basic service for us. Limpopo is one of them. And I will also demonstrate to the House how we are actually going to handle this situation. KwaZulu-Natal is one of them. It's that unbelievable. This is one of the most important programs of this government, and to have a situation whereby the province really does not have a platform where it is able to come together with the municipalities, separate government, to talk about the critical work, it defeats the purpose. And partly, in fact, I would also shift some of the blame from the collapsing elements of the leadership provided from national upfront. The last one, poor SBS facilitation by municipalities, the absence of this coordination that is expected to happen at municipal level is a crisis. And I will also reflect how we are ever going to try to deal with this issue. This problem is not regarded as a critical problem, a problem in our municipalities. In fact, I tell our municipalities that it cannot be that you continue treating this problem as a makeshift arrangement. It is very rare, Honourable Chairperson, that you get to a municipality and they will demonstrate very, very well to you what is happening in terms of really, here I'm not necessarily talking about warm bodies, but constructive coordination of the program at the municipal level. In most instances, the CFO of a municipality is actually dealing with SGS as the last resort issue when it's tired running around. In most instances, the technical manager. In certain instances, the IT manager as the last resort kind of thing. In fact, that is also demonstrated quite clearly. Right now, I am in the process of analyzing the IDPs of all the municipalities. I'm almost halfway. It's the kind of work that going forward, given the platform, we'd like to share with some of our colleagues, including this portfolio. We have already moved with a whole lot of them, and you will be shocked to realize that some of these IDPs, municipalities, are not even mentioning this program. And for me, it just cannot be. This, for me, in fact, is the most critical problem of this government. We can talk all these issues that we want to do. Infrastructure, yes, it's an ideal, universal access, but in the end, we have to be asking ourselves critical questions. and the poor getting access to the services. And that really owes to the critical coordination of this problem. Honorable Chairperson, let me quickly jump to the solution. In this slide, I am attempting here, Honorable Chairperson, to return to the House some of the work that we are doing as a department in the current financial year, 2013 and 14. We supporting municipalities. We convening sessions that are targeting basic services managers and counselors responsible for the services, including CFOs as well as IGP managers, trying to assist them how best they should apply the Indian implementation guidelines so that at least in the end they can begin to say the Indian register, which is a question of this house, are indeed credible. When you look at the Indian register, it's not credible. That is not an issue. The critical issue is about the credibility of the municipal tailor-made Indian policy. That policy has to be credible. It has to be very, very clear how everything has been done, starting from the regulation, the identification, and all of that. That is just an end product, a register, where we register these Indians. But the issue is about the credible municipal Indian policy. This is the work that we are doing. And I'm talking to the issue of structure, and I'm championing this thing in the department running around. There is just a reflection of the progress. Even lack of capacity, we have targeted to provide this support to at least 50 municipalities. We've seen about that, but the target is not an issue. It's about us making an impact. So we've done this, if you look at that calculation. You can see also what I have just indicated to the House in terms of the organization. You look at Northwest. Out of the total of 25 municipalities, if I'm correct, 15, all those targeted politicians, councillors, and all of that coming, 15, you can see the number, it speaks to itself and accounts to the organization. Look at the Eastern Cape, out of the 25 municipalities, I don't remember precisely the number. You can see the number there, that indeed there is willingness from those provinces. So these are some of the things, Honorable Chairperson, that we are doing to try and bring back the image of this program and the department. But with regard to, and in fact it does not end there. It is not only about what we have committed here. It is also about what we are planning to do in the medium, during the medium term, MTSF period, between 2014 and 2019. We are coming here, Honorable Chairperson, after adjourning yesterday from the Coxa family. I had a strategic planning session. We started on Friday. The whole strategy we're working. We only adjourned yesterday, deliberating on these critical issues. What should be done? And I'm excited, and my DG felt that we need, although there is no official time of yet, we have agreed that there is nothing that will stand on the way of this program. So these things are actually going to be done. Activities. We just wanted to caution, to say grasp what to caution, until really the signature is put in legalized. But critical of indicators is that during this 5 years, we want to make sure that we address entirely the whole question around the indigent policies, the credibility. We want to make sure that all the ministries that are supposed to develop these policies have developed them. No excuses. Also, we are taking responsibility to develop a national indigent register. That is going to be done. And here I am talking about the National Indigenous Register, which will be hosted by us nationally. And we're doing that, Honorable Chairperson, to try and remove that budget from our municipalities. We know that we're talking different types of municipalities. You've got cities that have moved quite significantly, state of the art architecture in terms of administering this indigenous, we are aware of that. But what will be happening on this National Indigenous Register will be in 5 instances. To find ways of integrating those systems. There is also another group of municipalities where at least things have been done to an acceptable level, but not quite well. But your white municipalities are simply battling with this issue. So we are taking that responsibility to say you can go out now and spend time on really verifying the indigenous. Don't waste time running on anything, running around with the indigenous. That is going to be developed by our department, the National Department of Corporate Governance. In fact, I should be indicating to you that this is one of the issues that was in the pipeline, which was already beginning to be processed just before the restructuring. But anyway, this is one of the things that we are going to be waiting for. Number three, Indeed, an exit strategy is critical. We need to do this within the next 5 years so that en route to 2030, we are able to really say how are we graduating these indigenous out of the indigenous register. We need to be able to do that. And we don't want to leave this up to municipalities themselves, because we have realized that some of them are already attempting. So it becomes a challenge. When a household is registered as an indigenous, suddenly there's relief that the you know, members of that family get employment and suddenly, you know, they are getting some kind of income and it keeps them above the threshold, they are very registered and all of that. And it happens to be just a temporary job after 6 months. What happened? Some of the municipalities are beginning to say, no, we don't want to register them anymore and all of that. So we realize that there is that kind of chaos. So we are going to take leadership to come up with the strategy that will assist municipalities how to deal with this matter uniformly as government. Number four, Honourable Chairperson, is the issue around the implementation, the implementation evaluation of the FDS program to make recommendations on innovative implementation modalities to accelerate FDS field services program. This is something that I'm also championing. It has matured already. DPME is having this issue. I'm sure Honourable Chairperson and members of the House, you probably would be familiar with it. That DME has been asked to come up with 15 high-level evaluations each year. This year, what they are doing, free basic services, is actually on top of the agenda. As I speak, finally, we have worked around it. They've already approved our concept note. The main reason why we want to do this, we actually want to do the implementation evaluation to satisfy and check where the flop is. If that is really an official way to use Jefferson, with your permission, what exactly is happening? How is it that we cannot be able to speed up the rolling out of this program? Where are the glitches? We feel that this implementation will come up with recommendations that will assist us to speed up the rolling out of this program. We are already looking at a situation whereby from 2020, we just want to be talking development now, concentrating on how this the so-called indigenous households are graduated out of this indigenous register. So this is very, very interesting. We have spoken to our sister department also. All the four services are going to be involved in this critical work. Spoken to the DDG responsible, Mita Apale is released, senior official who will be participating in this work. And the same applies to all the four services. We've got senior officials who will be in the steering committee as we move with this evaluation. And also our immediate implementation guidelines of what it will be rolled out. So this is part of the solution, what we'll be doing. But also, the next slide, which I will not really spend time, if you were to ask the question, Honourable Chairperson, to say, out of those priorities, activities that you are going to implement in the next 5 years, what are the things that you are prioritizing as a department in the next financial year? That slide talks to that. We want to quickly develop to define our guidelines, but critical, as I've indicated, is the development of the National Indigenous Register. That we are going to do, because already there is a problem. It's going to remove all the problems, and we know that you have actually invited us to this portfolio committee because of the issues that were indicated by the Department of Energy in February when you met with them, complaining about this issue, to say it is very, very difficult for the municipalities to identify the poor and all of that. We try to really close that space. We of course the evaluation will be done as well next year. But number four in particular is to say even though we will be focusing more on those products, we are not going to really take our hands off from the intermittent kind of support to the municipality. We will be going every now and then the municipalities which will be calling upon us to come and help. But on a very, very good condition, I've already indicated that these currently going through all the IGPs. This will be done in a differentiated manner, but we will only be going to assist municipalities who have actually unpacked the issues. What is it that they want to do in their municipalities? So the kind of support that we will be intelligently providing should be embodied in the IGP. So that space will not leave. But largely you can see its product, but we will still be continuing to build it with our municipality. Honourable Chairperson, with regard to dropping the ball national, we have top management in that department has taken a decision to resuscitate this program And why did I not have indicated that SBS is really a primary program without which our department, we are aware, it will be incomplete and it will not fully execute its mandate, let alone the realization of the vision. We did certain times deliberately, and I'm humbled to say this, Honorable Chairperson, to say yes, the decision has been taken. It's going to be facilitated, at minimum, looking at how the structure used to be, to make sure that we are effective in terms of providing this coordination across the three spheres of government. So that decision, indeed, has been taken. I will not spend time on this slide. This is just a reflection of the strategic role of the program, what exactly it will be doing. First, it will be around coordination to make sure that there's acceleration in the implementation of the program, the issues around monitoring, report, and evaluation, which is a big issue, of course. You will realize that the Department of Energy, Chairman Mas, has indicated to you that, or not necessarily being able to account properly in terms of access, you know, household access to free basic alternative energy and all that. In reality, that responsibility rests with the Department of Cooperative Governance. So indeed, we acknowledge, we brought the board, they have been working with us in the past, it is our responsibility to actually make sure this monitoring happens. So all of that is actually going ahead with full steam. Let me probably think this is the slide before I stop my presentation. With regards to the issue of absence or dysfunctional FPS provincial forum provinces, the solution here is that as I am convening this session in province, one of the things that I am doing in those provinces which do not have FPS forum at all, we have developed terms of reference which we are discussing with those provinces to make sure that they start convening those forums. And their target set, is that those provinces, before the end of the current financial year, which is March, 31st March 2014, they must have convened a session. If that is not going to happen, an agreement, if that is not going to happen, I've done that with KZN as well, if that is not going to happen, the matter will be escalated to our Honorable Minister, and it will have to be formally dealt with agreement with the Honorable MEC. That is going to happen. So this work that I'm doing is an expectation. I will be putting together a report which will go to MINMEC and also check ourselves against these targets to see these problems that are not coordinated, convening this forum, what is it? So we have that. Administratively, that is what I am doing currently. But politically, that is what will kick in if things do not happen. We also, the issue around the FDS coordination, administration, this is a very, very difficult one. Myself as an official, I can only be able to talk to the Honorable Councillors and the Section 56, 57 members. It may not necessarily yield anything. This is rather a very difficult one. Chairperson, there's evidence that actually some of the municipalities, although I will not necessarily be able to give you figures, don't even budget for this program. It happened in 2009 when we did our assessment, local government assessment, we found that there are such municipalities which do not provide support. So this program, actually, that is why at this level we would want a political intervention. So that report will inform our minister and make those recommendations, because we are fully aware of the fact that free basic services at that sphere, where things are supposed to happen, where the game is supposed to be played, this is an both administrative and political program. If the conduct of a municipality is not interested in this matter, it will simply not happen. They will either not budget. They will not be interested in making sure that the kind of capacity that they throw in that municipality to make sure things happen. Those things will not happen. So it is at the mercy of that political structure with the municipality. So that gap needs to be closed as early as possible. If the government and if the target and the issues that are saying in the National Development Plan indeed are to be realized. I will stop there, Chairman.
Very often the term Malehas. Malehas. Yeah, that's all the one. It's a tough one. One of the members, the Malehas,
has tried his best to articulate both achievements in scenario, including the challenges in terms of the three basic services that include both free basic electricity and free basic alternative energy. Thank you very much for that. But also, it's also commendable the fact that the doctor has been grappling with the issue. It's not just a must come and paint a grim picture and say, you know, it's work in progress. But at the end, in your conclusion, you did articulate quite a number of what I would regard as earnest and honest attempts to remedy the situation. That's very, very much commendable. And what I pick up as well is seeing that not only are you coming to present this, make this presentation, but you have expectations that, not in the sense that we're not part, we're not the main committee for you people, the portfolio committee on cooperative governance and transnational affairs, but there's an expectation from this team that we also make a contribution from an angle of electricity and alternative energy to ensure that the challenges that are here are addressed in a comprehensive way. They are not the honorable members. So there's a challenge now, the ball is now caught in that regard. In fact, now you will understand the reason why there has been a continuum. Because it would have been easy for us to have had a presentation from the Department of Energy, we close our chapter by Dangi, we move on. But because it was quite clear that it's not easy to, in fact, it's an incomplete journey if you handle free basic electricity and alternative energy by just getting a presentation from a Department of Energy only, you know, as we have done even in the past, you know, the doctor must come, and also the new giant, former Minister Baloyi was saying, that is MISA, must also articulate what his role and contribution is going to be, with a lot of expectation due to his immediate. And also SALCA, let me just also put on record, Mr. Godzilla, I still would like to get from SALCA exactly when they get the invitations here, because I'm not happy at the fact that they are not able to come, they've given a reason, but as practice we do tell, you know, particularly vital players, you know, in time, so that we could have even played around with things, because it was going to be very vital to have SALCA to be here. You know. Once they work closely with the department, but at least they are the people who have the finger on the pulse. Without further ado, shall I then invite honorable members for comments, questions, clarity seeking? There it is. That is Slough. Let us go down the route. That is Slough, Honorable Smale, Slumbul.
Thanks, Chairperson. It's quite clear that the identification of a person or of a person you call an indigenous is a problem. It's not an easy. Your life of people is not set. At some point there will be that 2,300, but someone gets a job in Jim Trista. That some dogs are not clever. The contract of some work program, which will work up to a particular period at an end. And that will go back to the same situation. So it's quite a difficult situation to try and develop a database that you will have a permanent number of people and their names and say these people are indigenous for life. It doesn't happen. So to manage just who is indigenous in itself is a mammoth task. I'm not sure what whether the department has gone deep into looking into this and say, how are we going to do it? Well, it's quite obvious. I have I been unemployed this year, but I've been employed then. So then I mean, region can never be a guarantee store. So how do you manage that particular situation into the future? In other words, what are the checks and balances that you can accept the honesty of people to come and say, take me out of that list, I'm now employed, which is very bad. Really does happen, it's very bad. Except for that, do you have any other checks and balances through which you can be able to detect this family still the money to get? That's the second question. I have to say, not every municipality is forced to create the database, because it also goes along with powers and capacity to give that service. I'm not sure where the money comes from for the indigenous. Is it the money that comes from the municipality, or is it the money that is a grant from COCTA into municipalities to pass on to the main COCTA and treasure into the municipality to pass on to the indigenous? What role does COCTA play, or where does this money come from? Where does the money come from? Who plays what role up to the level where it reaches the city, which is the indigenous family? Other question is the issue. Okay, no, I think other questions have been covered in the explanation of the same question. Well, the other issue was the issue of permanency, and it's covered already, and the issue of what's the meaning of the power and capacity to do that service to the indigenous. And that service, as you said, is not a free basic necessity of our portfolio, but it's free basic service, which includes a number of areas. Electricity just as one component. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jefferson. Coming back to our portfolio and how the department to make sure that electricity is affordable and that the indigenous does receive what they should be receiving. We all know that indigenous electricity, most of them are on block tariffs, and there are various unit charges towards that block tariff. Are you monitoring the actual the 56.24 rand, the breakdown of energy? Are you actually being able to monitor that 56.24 of that portion, or the various portions, the breakdowns, are actually being used by the local municipality for the specific purpose, and that one of those blocks is not being used to cover some of the other operational expenses that the municipality could or might have, and that it actually gets rolled out to that. Secondly, you made quite reference to credible list and how often a credible list has got to be, and taking a bit of response from my colleague next to me is that you need to be able to get to a system where people need to be able to check the indigenous or reapply to come, like we do with some of our other grants that we've got currently in our systems, like the pension grants and those things where people need to reapply. And my concern is that you would find that you might save money, or you might find new people on the list in order to make it a credible list. How possible is it to get to a system like that and to deal with those, you know, in order to make it a credible list. Is it possible? You made reference to that your program has actually collapsed at one stage in 2009. I'm actually trying to understand what was the impact of that. If a program has actually collapsed, there surely there must have been an impact. Surely there's a number of households of people that we probably didn't get to or weren't as efficient as. Have you done some sort of an impact assessment to determine what the implications was or could be for government? Just a matter of noting that some of the municipalities that haven't got indigenous red and registered here, I must say, is probably district municipalities that actually hasn't got the mandate actually to do that, but it's actually with local municipalities. And I think that's where you will see that you will take a whole lot of municipalities off the list, and you will see probably 100% compliance in certain of those provinces. Just something that I just picked up. Chair, I don't want to get onto the local government space. I'm trying to focus on our profile. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for the presentation. It really opened my mind and covered a lot of doubts which I had, but I still have got questions. My first one is about you spoke about municipalities calling you. My question is, if those municipalities are not calling you, I'm not going to go there. Because why I'm saying this is, I heard you saying that the national government should take it upon itself to help. Because really, down there are problems. And the main problems are this. When you look at the council of 2000, had thorough training. And people are coming in today and every day to be there. And they don't have the knowledge which was given to this new municipality. Because these are new municipalities. They were not there before. So I just want to know, what are you going to do about it? The other one is about the CDWs were created to look at the poor of the poorest of the poor people. What are they doing? Because there's a stipend for them to do that job, to help the municipalities. I just want to know, what are they doing? Are you not looking after them to see what they are doing? The other one, which will be perhaps my last one, is about what you spoke about the monitoring. It's quite very, very, very important, because the problem is with us people. We are not honest. A person is not poor, but pretends to be poor. So those are some of the things that we really have to look after. Otherwise, we will just be a welfare state unnecessary. So if we do those things, I think really this government will be going somewhere. The other thing is, I don't know whether it's coming to you, but with the municipalities, most of them don't have or they don't honor their bylaws. That's the problem as well. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jen. Now, adding to the main question, I know it is impossible to get a credible list of indigenous. But what is happening to the people that will share that is allocated to the municipality when this program is collapsed? Because you are telling us that the program is collapsed. And I know that people are not getting these free basic services. Even worse for free basic electricity. That's even worse. So what is happening as the municipalities diverting it to other programs and do some of their programs with this allocation that is supposed to be assisting poor people.
Thank you. So the policy that says an overarching guideline gets made at that level, at the level of COPA, and thereafter, guided by that, each municipality does its own bylaw that suits its conditions. I know for a fact of a municipality that has undermined the idea of India. And what they do is for a particular period of the month or a particular number of units, they take them out free for all. And they after stop, everybody does pay. And this is obviously in violation of the indigent in the understanding of what is in the world. And I know of some indigent people who said to me, the price increase of electricity also reduces the number of units that they are getting, because there's a price increase of electricity, but there's no increase of their indigent to match that so that they can continue to get that. That what they get, the money that comes in remains the same, but the price of the electricity continues to rise, which therefore reduces their units. They get far less than what they used to get in this process. And I'm speaking for electricity this time, I'm not sure about whether in the other areas the prices are also increasing, impacting on the same indigent person, I mean, to make a better life.
Yes, thanks very much, Miroslav, and also the other members. What also comes to mind is the fact that there's still the dilemma of cross-subsidization. Alka has presented that a couple of times. In fact, that's why you find that we talk of a journey, you know, in handling this. You know, it can't just be a once-off event, because even when we engage, you know, whether it's ESCOM together with Alka and the department and other things, issues of cross-subsidization, they come, and you know, particularly even during the MIPD3 process, you know, that issue came. So if you could just share a little bit on that, because it's a very, very sensitive and detached thing. Because the claims from NASA that there is ring-fenced money that has to go into, yeah, things like infrastructure maintenance. Now that backlog has gone up to 33 billion. And unavoidably, you have to talk about, I know we talk about the free basic electricity, but at the end of the day, you know, I'm also provoked by Matt Dindo's question that what happens to the money that is allocated for a specific purpose? And also, I think the test lab has actually touched this a little bit of what I wanted to get to know as well. Is that for those municipalities that have their own indigent policies, I did get clearly as to how
DECOGTA is monitoring the implementation of those policies, compliance and things. Because one of the things that we have picked up is that some municipalities give free basic electricity to all people. It links up with the Tesla's point a little bit as well. So what I want to get from you now, or is that a reflection of the inconsistency? If there's any. Could there be any other reasons that some municipalities do not do any allocation or budgeting on free basic electricity apart from the not having the indigent register?
Let me pick up from now. We'll be doing other, I mean, go to Mr. Let me pick up a few other areas. I did pick up a very interesting model from Queenstown. Where all the members, what the council there did was to get unemployed graduates to clean up the register. I trust and hope they are still quite confident that they shared with me. I mean, it was not a formal engagement, it was informal, formally to my know, asking them. They feel strongly that they've done a good job. I mean, they got unemployed graduates to go out into the community for verification and at least the register is a little bit better than what it used to be. Are you aware of that? To what extent, that's why Salk should have been here. You know, to what extent is that, or can that use as a model? Well, the ease of the credibility of the register is quite significant. I see in terms of achievements, you've reached a couple of things there. The basic services monitoring and reporting system, framework for developing qualifying criteria, the communication strategy and publication, particularly those. To what extent have those been implemented and the effectiveness? I'll tell you why, Murana, I'm asking particularly on communication and basically publication. Where I'm deployed, we've got an electricity forum working with ESCO. Of course, we didn't rush for free basic electricity because there were other things that were a challenge. But one of the things that we picked up was that people are scared to go and ask for free basic electricity because of illegal connections. But we're not picking up the extent. Look, my assumption and expectation was that some of the communication strategy would have been having effect, and also publications within around there, you know, one or another. Sorry to say too much of a half voice, but just to say. Or as I mean, just an isolated situation, but in other areas, surely something could have happened. It's fine that is that the case. I must express my concern and the people and honored members about the reluctance of the municipality to remove those who cry between the indigenous interests. Because no matter how much they have, that can be refined, at the end of the day, it's about human beings. I'm just raising my concern, and I hope we will keep our tabs on that one and monitor it like anything. FDF provincial forums are a brilliant idea. But my interest is that what about the other role players? Are they there as well? Once again, your ESCOM, the Energy Department, and particularly traditional leaders. My impression is that traditional leaders, not 100% of them are always very sensitive about the plight of their people, where they are located in their jurisdiction. Without necessarily saying that they can be directly involved, but there could be a representation one way or another. Just, that's the reason why I'm asking about this, you know, in the forum. Slightly less 11, maybe I didn't pick it up. But maybe let me just ask the question in this just, because you see, KZN is one of the provinces that doesn't have provincial forum. And KZN is got 47 municipalities about it. Then the relations between the sector, there's an absence of a forum and the local forum there. I guess that's what one wanted to know.
Okay. Let me hand over to the department for now for response.
Thank you, Honourable.
Welcome to Team Energy.
Yeah.
That's what you should expect from us. This is Team Energy. Is there no one from the Department of Energy? Anyone from the Department of Energy here? Yeah, Ethel, yeah, welcome, Ethel. But there's a bit. Oh, Nelson. Yes, thanks, Nelson, for coming. I wouldn't mind a note if you want to ask any questions and whatever. Not that you're an honored man, but the regulatory component is yeah, compliance. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're here around this section. Because that's very important. Whilst we're talking about the indigent, but also the compliance angle is very important. Okay, over to you, Mr.
Thank you, Sir President. I will prefer to start at the bottom. With regard to slide 7, Honorable Chairperson, only 7 municipalities supported. Yes, your observation is quite correct. I need to perhaps just clarify that. Given the size, the problem, the number of municipalities, and the targeted number of officials as well as politicians, candidates, in our session. With KZN, we decided to divide that into three. So the first session, which was attended by only 7 municipalities, targeted only 21 municipalities. So after we divided with the province, it was felt that no, because of all these people, you know, we really just don't want to call a mass meeting. We want very, very effective meetings. So we the first capacity building session was convened. Only 21 municipalities were invited, but 7 came. So we still have plans in the pipeline to convene similar sessions with the remaining 40 municipalities. But of course, owing to the poor attendance from the 21, probably I would be reluctant to. In fact, for me, the organization, you know, the forum issue as a province, yes, I do see that as a factor that is also contributing to poor planning in that regard. With regard to forums, you know, Chairperson, you've made a very good point to say, well, it's a good idea. What about the composition? We're very, very clear in terms of that, Chairperson, and we have covered the sector quite. All the regional ESCOM offices in that respective municipalities, they are expected to be part and parcel of the forum. National offices, they are expected to be part and parcel of that, including provincial. But the one point which you have actually made, which I find quite appealing, which we missed completely in the terms of reference, is the idea around traditional leaders that we never affect us, and actually we have taken note of that. With regard to achievement, Honorable Chairperson, the extent to which we have implemented some of these, I never make excuses, Chairperson, but these things, by and large, were never implemented. The framework criteria was approved. In fact, we have just resuscitated our website on the SDS, so that members of the public can be able to access that. But this 2009 restructure came at a time when we were just about, we had drawn a plan, in fact, how we were going to roll it out. But it was never, this is one of the things that actually helped me so much. It was such, you know, a good work by that department, and it would have taken us far. It was never implemented. The MNP system, we had gone into the trouble of wanting to attempt to train all the 200
MNE.
The MNE system, which is also indicated as part of the argument.
MNE?
Monitoring and reporting system. Honorable Chair, the monitoring and reporting system, which you have indicated to what extent has that been rolled out as well. So what I'm saying, Chairperson, is that we never rolled it out. But we had, at the time of the, when the restructuring came to us, we had trained 165 municipalities. We took an approach of wanting to make sure that, first of all the municipalities are trained on the use of this. And we had sessions, two-day sessions. One thing that I need to commend our municipalities about, Honorable Chairperson, is really the willingness, especially when it comes to this monitoring and reporting issue. We look at them. They travel to Pretoria, coming at their own expense, not saying anything to them, to come specifically to be trained on this thing. We have reports, 165 municipalities were trained on that. So our approach was to train all the municipalities and then officially go to the public space or something like a conference and roll it out. It was never done. So it was never rolled out. It is the product of the department. These are some of the things that I've indicated that we will be working on them. We don't owe anybody on that monitoring and reporting system. So it's there, not now, owing to this lull between 2009 and last year. The publication, Honorable Chairperson, mainly this one, was about the streamlining of reporting. We had a problem. In fact, we were challenged by precedent. You would remember that the only department that has been working with us very, very well prior to 2009 has always been the Department of Energy. The Department of Energy never came on board in as far as wanting to somehow, you know, lack of better ways, compete with us in terms of what is supposed to be done by COMSA and all of that. So they never really collected information. They were never doing the reporting. They left that up to us, as it is. It is in terms of the arrangement of how the structure is supposed to function. But President had a problem to say, most of the time when we request for statistics from your department, we will get this kind of thing. Previously, statistics is a figure. But if we go to Water Affairs, we will get figures, but different figures from yours. If we go to Section A, we will get figures, different figures from yours. All these institutions, including, by the way, SALGA, even the Delegation Board. So we felt at the time that it would be best for us to try and consolidate this whole issue by lobbying all the sector departments, which, by the way, also have got the constitutional right not to even agree with us, come together so that as government we speak with single voice, one publication. It was quite an amazing achievement. We entered into a service level agreement with the DG of Secretary Badly Water, and that was that. And that publication was as a result of that. So if it wasn't for the abrupt, you know, facing in, the coming in of the restructuring, we would have been far. That was agreed. We wouldn't really be talking anything different as government. So that publication was the first and the last. And of course, then it disappeared. The communication strategy as well, Honorable Chairperson, was never rolled out. And this indeed would have gone far. It's not embarrassing. We are aware of that. Across the political spectrum, politicians already are hitting the road, running across the political spectrum. When they get to communities, they talk about FTS. There are some communities which would be telling them, we don't even know about this. So we know it's a shame that strategy was there, but because of that transparency, it was actually never rolled out. There was also a question that you made, a very good question, Honorable Chairperson, for the reasons why the budget issue. It is a very, very difficult one, Honorable Chairperson, because there are municipalities that are actually arguing, and there is no, I can't speak with confidence, evidence. They cite political interference around this issue, but one thing for sure that they are aware of on the basis of facts is the fact that some of these problems in countries, it is simply owing to the fact that those municipalities are poor. We should remember that equitable share is not a conditional grant. And in fact, the revising of the formula has actually removed the window. When you used to say at least for free basic water, you have to budget. For free basic energy, that has been removed. So it goes to the municipalities to say it is for the poor. It is solely dependent on the blessing of the council of the municipality. I have recently engaged National Treasury on that. National Treasury indicated to me, and I've got a problem with this, and you know, at my level, some of the issues I will not be able to talk about. You know, the discussion, the current discussion was, we can't begin to advocate conditionality on the equitable share because that is against the Constitution. They quoted whatever they understand about the Constitution, that it cannot be made conditional. But that, Honourable Chairperson, is creating problems.
But can you shift, I hope I understand the environment, can you then shift something which is within the equitable share realm into conditional grants? What's the difference? So
yeah.
That is locked now.
Yeah.
The conditionality.
Yeah.
Can't use that money.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Can you shift?
Yes. At the moment, it cannot be done. It's not. They are not going to attach. It cannot be done. And it's a policy issue. And it's very, very important that you are raising. You are actually. This is important. That it is a policy issue that we will have to deal with. So there is no conditionality at the moment. We cannot be able to do it in terms of how things have been defined. So it's a policy issue. We can't do anything. It's left solely up to the municipalities to decide. So that cannot be done at this point in time. And I'm sure we should acknowledge that it is really a very serious witness. I have noted those issues. That it's an issue that needs to be taken up. It just cannot continue like that. Because otherwise, it defeats the purpose. The money goes into the municipalities, but they have to, it is kind of amazing, you know, whether they want to. But at the same time, we also need to be looking into the bigger picture in terms of the viability of some of our municipalities. Some of those municipalities that are indeed physically poor, what then should happen? And I'm not saying that really to shoot myself on the foot, because it's the viability of some of those municipalities. That just cannot raise revenue. It's only this equitable share. So they see this as an opportunity to use equitable share in any way. And the issue of what is intended for becomes really the last thing. And it never happens in most instances. So yes, Honorable Chairperson, I've noted that it's a very, very critical matter. That is, something has to be done. It cannot be left like that. And that's what I told National Treasury. There are a lot of things these days, the way in which we have moved developmentally, Honorable Chairperson, and I'm sure you agree with me, there are a lot of issues that already hinges with the Constitution. You go and you just can't do certain things because of the Constitution. So these issues, really, practically, as we move, unfold, in our developmental stage, we're beginning to really get to that point. The same applies, to give you another example, Honorable Chairperson, with regard to water issues, provision of free basic water in the privately owned land. Without going into the details, the big issue that we discussed around that, the certain things we discussed to the last level, and you realize that the issue now becomes the Constitution. So, but that we have noted, Honorable Chairperson. Yes, there was a question, and you have been interpreted by consolidating this question with the Honorable Yes. The monitoring of implementation and compliance, it has not been done. It hasn't been done, Honorable Chairperson. I just can't sit here and really pretend to this house that certain things have been done. If this thing was done prior to 2009, we're talking about, let's talk current administration. In the last 5 years, these things have not been done. And secondly, Honorable Chairperson, owing to really the dissipation of this process. So that has not been done. And of course, we can be held accountable for that to say, but look, that's why the participants, some of them just with a blanket approach, it's 8 years for everybody, and all of that. Yes, we acknowledge, we dropped the ball. And that is why my principal, Honorable Chairperson, said you have to be very, very honest with that committee and be fair to us and tell them things as they are. So it hasn't been done. There was an issue around infrastructure and NEPA. I've requested my colleague Fabian to actually deal with that. If you can, in fact, you can zoom in as I refresh myself.
Okay, thanks. I think we'll try to deal with that now, the presentation for Misa, because we're working very closely with the colleagues who are dealing with the ADAP, which is also looking at the asset management distribution issue in the future.
Yeah. I think there was also another question which is similar to the issues around equitable share. What happens to the equitable share collapsing? If not, which, to say the impact of the coordination from national. And my response to that is that it's not even about us not occupying our space. It is all about the same issue that the Jefferson raised to say, what happens to that equitable share when it gets there? We have no ground at the moment. We are not really saying it goes there. Let's acknowledge that the policy action that needs to be dealt with, that something needs to be done. We have to really refocus this thing in such a manner that municipalities are arrested in such a manner that somehow they are forced to really have to budget for this thing. Because if we don't, it's not going to happen. But if we do that, it will also be triggering against the same issue that I have pointed out to say, if you do that, it will be interesting what will be happening to those municipalities that are not able to raise revenue at all. Those proper municipalities, it will be very interesting. So, that's all I can say on that issue. There is also another very, very good question around what happens if municipalities are not calling us, whether we do not go there or not. It is really an open question. It doesn't work like that. The issue of IDGs and them giving a shout to their provinces and all that is something we say. But we do interact with them quite closely. But what makes that effective? Is when the provinces will be playing their role in terms of the forum. Because in those forums, we need all the municipalities. We need all the municipalities to be there as national to deal with the issues. But we extend, now you will realize that the collapsing has affected us big time. You will realize that after the adornment of those forums, there will be those municipalities that will be shouting, we need you, come, and all of that. We have to zoom in those places. And one thing we've been extremely careful about is to make sure that, but if we zoom into a local space, we've got to be able to do that together with the province, not alone as national. There are very, very critical issues here around the whole question of autonomy and all of that, which we know that is also another constitutional impediment. It is very, very difficult. An issue which also emerged quite strategically during our strategic planning session to say, how do we go about providing this support? So it's very difficult. In as much as our concentration is to really empower provinces to provide that support, the infrastructure, we also do our best. We cannot really stay out of this game because of the issue of autonomy and all of that. Because if something happens in that local space, it is very, the president is called on board. He will not be calling the municipal manager or anybody. He speaks to our minister. Our minister cannot say, hey, guys, so honorable president, state president, the province is supposed to do 1, 2, 3. It is supposed to be us. So we're doing that, and it speaks generally to our intergovernmental relations. These are some of the issues that we as a department are also trying to strengthen to make sure that we come on board. So we don't only wait for them to call us. We do go there. We do, through our forum, and really also outside the forum, we do go to those specific municipalities and work with them. For example, what I've just demonstrated in terms of what we are doing currently, our own initiative, just to make sure that we cover all the other municipalities, to make sure that really we educate each other, we empower each other in terms of making sure that these bylaws are done properly. So we don't just wait for them to call us. The issue around citizens, it is also a very, 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 very good one. We have not, in all honesty, gone beyond that, but this is an issue that we are actually preaching. because it owes to that coordinating structure of the municipality. This is the municipality, that is why mostly when it comes to the lack of credibility of this interlocutor, you would expect, these are the things that I am taking from there. There is no way in which the municipality, municipal officer, will actually be able to champion that aspect of verifying the household and all of that. The municipality has to come closer to its people. It has to know its people. And it's got to be done through all the structures, the CCWs, watch committees, and all of that, including the chief, by the way. So these things we are preaching. But the only way for that to happen effectively is when that coordination of this program at municipal level is being done properly, which is not happening currently. I quite agree that, you know, there are those that are supposed to, that, you know, our people prepared and all of that, the strength of money, and we know the leakages, those that are not supposed to be benefiting, those that are supposed, and vice versa. It is rather sad. And I have noted it in such a manner that our monitoring, in fact, is national, should step up to make sure that we are able to really see some of these leakages. One of my former Deputy Director General, Peter Clark, before he left the department to go to the city of Ebole, when he was there, he appointed this service provider, he took the Indian register of that city, said, go and verify it. It was quite amazing. We used to communicate quite closely after and left. They tried to verify that. It was amazing. Life threat. So that living, that is supposed to go to the poor. Wow. The service provider in the end concluded the process, and that Indian register was housed. But most of the households, they couldn't even really verify the thing. Because people did not want to let people in, you know, fighting for that little thing that is supposed to subsidize them. So it is very, very critical. We will have to make sure that our money bank really also works to that, the leakages and all of that. I think there was a question about, the 56 rands 24, whether it's being used. One thing which was done, which I did not entirely agree with on the revised evolution, was the issue of removing the windows to say for 3 days energy, you know, have to budget. For 3 days water, that aspect has been removed, and the argument that was actually driven by without necessarily really to say that I'm blaming my colleagues here, was to say this 27 billion is actually meant for the poor, so there's no need to have the window. So that creates a problem. We can't even begin, it's removed completely. It's just a loose allocation that goes to the municipality, and they have to see how to finish. So it's a bit difficult in that respect. The issue of reapplying, we should remember that the indigenous policy is a budget-related policy. So these things have to be reviewed on a yearly basis. But we know that the process can also be very tedious, very cumbersome, and mostly if you want to be consistent in most cases, it might actually even bring about boredom to our indigenous. The fluctuation, suddenly you see your indigenous register dropping, because the process that has to come from there, you know, people get tired of all this. But we've got ways and means when they're trying to address some of those issues. So, you know, it is allowed that a municipality can actually write to the council and say, for this financial year, we are not going to start this, to ask them to re-register. We will continue with the same individual register. But then there has to be, if the council approves that, it has to be done conditionally. That there has to be verification. So that verification has to be done. But these policies have to be reviewed on an annual basis.
What you're thinking is the 56 bucks for both free basic electricity and alternative energy, or is it just for basic electricity? 56 rands 24 cents, as in slide 6, page 3.
Honourable citizen, I am not a very ignorant person, but my understanding of that breakdown is that it is for both alternative and grid.
Any ratio?
Yeah, when it gets to that, well, maybe there are other colleagues that are able to articulate.
Yeah, good Monday.
Yeah.
Just note it down, you can respond later.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The impact of the the Honourable has the collapsing and the sort of like dissipation of the program, and the matter of I stop to say, was where this was done, but very minimal, where top management felt that we should not even pretend, nothing, of course, nothing was happening. That problem, the structure was not there, it was just that this little work done here and there. So Honourable Member wanted to ask whether we have really done an assessment to check what the impact. We know that there was really serious damage. We have not necessarily done the assessment, but we know that it has impacted quite negatively, and that is why some of these structures that were supposed to be in place in the provinces and all that, due to really lack of that national leadership, are not sitting right now. We have not necessarily done the assessment in relation to that, but it has affected us quite negatively. I want to also agree that the identification of indigenous is a very, very problematic issue. I agree 100%. It can never be easy, this one. It is. We've always said that the guidelines can only provide the parameters. The only thing that can be used consistently is the threshold issue. But really, the criteria around that, checking, you know, all issues, the citizenship, all those other issues. It's not an easy matter. And the issue around exit strategy, as I've already indicated, that we will be moving in that space to make sure that we close the gap, because we are already aware of all the difficulties emerging from our municipalities. Those that are actually attempting to graduate some of the households which they think their conditions of living have improved, to make sure that there is consistent. There's one municipality in Northwest where they decided that once you are removed from this region, this job, this man, but once you are removed, when you come back to reapply, you will not necessarily be registered. So it cannot be like that. We really need a very, very regulated approach. So we will close that phase to make sure that indeed this graduate is taking into consideration short, medium, and long-term employment going forward. So we will be able to really zoom in that way through this indigenous strategy that we are going to develop. I think not if I have left out something on the bullshit, then they can always be a follow-up. I just thought that some of them were largely comments which we have noted only. But if I have missed something, they can always be a follow-up on title feeling.
No, they're fine. I'm just looking at time as well. My father do needs a matter of a couple of questions as well. NASA, once again, unless you are so quiet, you enjoy the input. But thanks very much, Malaka. But one of the members, since the key thing here is implementation. As things been implemented, we would be talking a different language, to the extent to which certain policy areas, certain programs have had an effect on the ground. Now we speak with tongue and cheek because there are certain areas. But we also need to applaud the team for being so upfront, honest, you know, and saying about the true state of affairs, and our wish. All government officials, when they come here, they are like that, because it's not about playing to the gallery and the public that we are seen as people who keep on whipping and chisambam to officials that come to the, yeah. In fact, recently, I met an official that said, look, when you are called, keep down, you start shivering. I said, no, but we're not deployed. Sorry. You know what, where that comes from. We're not deployed to get down, you know, to go around and ravaging and stealing on people. There's a developmental rationale for us to be here, you know. Oversight is not just about being supervisory, you know, and say, but generally, so. At times, it's about accepting what you are saying to us, that there's an expectation on that from our side as well. We should give a hand on this, which I hope at some stage, not necessarily now, you can craft something, even if it's a one-pager, to say exactly what would you like us to do. I have my ideas, then you can link with them. You know. But to me, it's the piece of implementation. Not that there are no specifics. I trust and hope the use of the role of CCWs is highlighted, because it just struck to me as well. I know we, I, when I said Lukanji was an unemployed graduate, a good initiative, but CCWs are permanent, they are paid by government, they are already there, they've done some work, and it links with the life stress as well. Something that makes me very excited, all of the members, once people start getting making subtle introduction or practices of civil disobedience. You know, we're not the banana republic, there's law in South Africa, and people have just got to abide by it. If the law is not okay, it's fed back to us, it's fed back to the law review commission, and it's fed back to everything, and then it's restructured, it's refined, because law is about influencing social, economic, and political behavior. But not to be rampantly and openly and presently, breached and ignored, and even undermined for that matter. But there are a couple of things I've just run through on members in closing. You spoke of training in the said municipalities, now 265 municipalities. Why the figures keep on reducing? They fly to Tswane. To me, what about localized and or teletraining? You know, we are a country with some good technology, you know, teletraining would be helpful, and I'm sure municipalities would be keen to look into that. Not only here in this area, I mean, there are a lot of things that municipalities have got to be empowered on, you know, not only with the COCRA, but other. So if infrastructure in this manner could be put in, it would be just for the benefit of free basic services. Another area, very crucial, honourable members, is data management. As you know, the Department of Energy has always been very uneasy about that. Unfortunately, we are coming to close of the term. Hopefully, those who will make it back to the team will take up the issue of data management at government level very, very seriously. Now, I'm thinking, honourable members, from the basis of energy, but it's being extended now, and here is the doctor indicating as well that they corroborate that there's a challenge on how we manage data, whether it's in the context of free basic services or even beyond. Because at the end of the day, it's about, you know, having information or data with integrity, with accuracy, and being able to use it for planning, for monitoring, you know, refinement and whatever. Of course, the self-test thing comes into that first stage. But once again, one thing to extend is the data paradigm coming, you know. To me, I don't see it as an inachievable effort to be able to maximize through software to pick up people who graduate one way or another. Some may be maybe a little bit outside that, but there could be software can do a lot of things. I know that I'm entering into another area of e-government, but maybe this could be one of the reinforcements that we should really be seeing, you know, a greater light of the day on e-government, so that we know that there's better e-data for free basic services, which includes free basic electricity, because that's where we are. Lastly, so once again, I'd like to say probably the next term, because there's enough time now. And in the committee, public hearings would be helpful on this. All of my members, we have held a couple of meetings on free basic electricity and free basic alternative energy. But the more we dig into this, the more we get our eyes open, the more we realize how complex it is. But thanks to the doctor today, we have even discovered that, amongst other things, why we were not necessarily that fully empowered is that there wasn't much implementation. Maybe we could have known better. Maybe the intercommittee public hearing could have been triggered far earlier, because there are other players that need to come. The new formula you were referring to has been presented to us by National Treasury. But unfortunately, we were not around, you know, to highlight these things, because we could have asked them, you know. Because as you can see, you know, whether it's a little bit outside the free basic electricity, but the issue of cross-subsidization is only a contentious issue.
who knows, when you unpack it, it will impact on this area of the basic services, including electricity as well. Hopefully those pulling the next term can take this matter further. But fundamentally is that we all concur, honourable members, even together with the delegation that is here, because notwithstanding that there may be officials today, but after 5 p.m. they are ordinary citizens of South Africa, and equally concerned about the welfare of the country, that well, this is a journey worth walking, and we need not stop here. We do need to quite succinctly and crisply get to know exactly what kind of support and contribution we need to make in this regard. Could be free basic services on the whole, but we know integral to that is free basic literacy. So whether we drive it at that level together with the portfolio committee on corporative government, we know that even our own competency or mandate is also catered for. And we trust and hope the department as well will start waiting for us from time to time. They will update us on the issues that regarding their solution plans, the National Indigent Register, and particularly the resuscitation program. You know, please update us on that from time to time. I might as well indicate that from the Committee of Chairs, the implementation evaluation by the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation was raised, and thanks for raising it, and hopefully that will be part of the mailing list so that you can update us in that regard specifically as to how is it being rolled out. On that call then, members, thank you very much, and thank the department of state, regularly, Jeremiah Lehazi. Can we then take a 10-minute break so that we can get back to the thank you very much.
We have 1 minute, but I learned that I must call the mayor, the honorable mayor, because the word honorable is only reserved for only two people in this country, the state president and the chief justice. So I was told that I must say his worship. So
that was
in that regard, honorable mayor, I subscribe to all protocols. I observe them, honorable chair, even if in my day I wouldn't be really literally in your time. Thank you. In terms of the municipal infrastructure support agent presentation, honorable chair, members, we're not going to go through all the slides. There are about 24 slides. But I believe that honorable members have got the hard copy of presentation. So there will be some slides that will jump to try to save time also. This slide just to give some indication in terms of where are we going to focus in terms of our presentation. Obviously it's very important to share with the members the overview of the MISA program and how it has been established and what it intends to do, and also share with the members the key programs that MISA is currently implementing, as well as the relationship between MISA, DBSA, which is the Development Bank of South Africa, and also looking at how MISA is supporting the Presidential Strategic Integrated Project, normally known as SIP, and also the role of MISA in terms of the program that has been initiated by Department of Energy, the approach to electricity distribution asset management issues, the ADAM, and also the way forward, honorable chair and honorable member. In terms of the overview, the MISA program was established through the Presidential Programmation Proclamation 29 of 2012. This proclamation was gazetted on the 11th of May 2012. And the MISA, of course, was established as one of the key thrusts of local government turnaround strategy. So in terms of the local government turnaround strategy, one of the commitments was that we'll establish the special purpose vehicle that will try to assist the turnaround of municipalities as far as infrastructure development and management is concerned. And obviously, that also deals with the issue of the refurbishment and maintenance of infrastructure. And obviously, in that regard, MISA has started operating. And in the current financial year, we have been allocated about 162 million. And over the MTF period, we're talking about 820 million. The money looks substantial, but when you look at the number of municipalities that we need to deal with, and also the management of the program, I think the program still currently underfunded. In terms of the vision for the MISA as the agent, initially when MISA was established, there was a discussion around whether it should be an agent or an agency. And then it was later advised by Treasury in concurrence with the Minister of Department of Public Administration that it should be an agent of government or a government component with the mission to provide technical support to municipalities towards accelerated delivery and effective management of municipal infrastructure. And it also is supposed to enhance technical capacity of municipalities to ensure effective plan delivery, operation and maintenance of infrastructure in municipalities.
Before you move, I'm sure some of us would be interested, what would have been the difference, or what is the difference between an agent and an agency? Not the English interpretation,
yeah.
According to dictionary, but in this context.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. And where I sit, I'm also allowed to delegate. Maybe I'll ask Mr. Victor Matanda, who's our boss in MISA, to also try to deal with that. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Just to explain about the board. But I just had the privilege of being there when the arguments were being put forward. What DTSA in particular advanced on that, if you use the word agency, you create an impression that MISA is no longer a government component. It can be interpreted as something that is outside, more in the mold of government public entities. But of course, when you look, really, there's no substantial difference. So we had to settle for the advice, and it becoming more as a directive to say, rather use the word agent. So it was inside the hand of that.
Thank you.
Thank you, in terms of the mandate of MISA, we can thoroughly put the mandate as follows: to render technical advice and support in order to optimize municipal infrastructure provisioning. We also have to coordinate the development and implementation of programs designed to strengthen the capacity of municipalities for planning, developing, operation and maintenance for the infrastructure in the municipalities. And it is not within MISA's mandate to provide funds, grants to municipalities for either infrastructure project implementation or the cost of maintaining the refurbishment of infrastructure. So what we say here, Honorable Chair, because MISA is supposed to support municipalities to execute projects in terms of the funding allocated to municipalities, whether it's equitable share, whether it's conditional grants, integrated national electrification program, municipal infrastructure grant, regional infrastructure grant. So that's what MISA is doing. You will remember that currently municipalities, at the end of the year, they result with a lot of underspending on conditional grants. So MISA then tries to build that capacity to make sure that municipalities are supposed to spend the grants that have been allocated to them through the division of revenue processes. And then in terms of the MISA role and responsibility, this is one of the slides, Honorable Chair, that I will also skip because I've already addressed some of the issues on this slide. But if there are questions, I believe the members have got the hard copy where we can deal with the questions that may arise. The following are the key support programs that we currently implementing the program through them. The first one is the technical support program. This is a technical support program. It ensures that MISA provides technical support to those municipalities that require assistance with regard to technical aspects of infrastructure planning, infrastructure development, infrastructure operations and management. And they will give the details later as we move in the slide that indicate what are these technical support that we provide to municipalities. But we also have a program that is looking at the sector, and in terms of the sector, it gives specific sector support in this regard. We're talking about the energy sector, we're talking about the roads, water, sanitation, waste management, and so on. And this program, it also collaborates with the relevant sectors. Like in the energy sector, we just started a very good collaboration with our colleagues at the Department of Energy led by Dr. Barnard, and we are coming up with programs that we need to tailor them for electricity and energy management issues. In terms of the capacity development program, this is a program that is also informed by the fact that there's always a challenge of saying there's not enough skills in the country where municipalities can tap the skills. So we facilitate the availability of these skills. And what we do, we work with FET colleges, tertiary institutions, to try to target those ones who are graduating, to give them the necessary skills, to give them the professional type of registration, either artisans, either we're talking about young engineers and so on. We also target municipal officials who are already employed by municipalities. We take them through the registration process, but our municipalities must have the requisite necessary skills so that they are able to implement the project as required by a number of compliance issues. And we also offer bursaries to young students who are leaving secondary schools, but we want them to focus on the municipal infrastructure related type of skills so that we can really try to deal with this part. We also have a vendor, a legal contract management, and this one, it ensures that we get professional service providers. And professional service providers in MISA, they come and deal with a highly specialized type of issue that you may not need an individual person. You need a particular company. Particularly in the electricity industry, you need highly specialized skills, and these skills, sometimes they are very expensive. So our vendor secretaries try to source this for us. They also manage the contract in such a way that we get the value for money and also offer contract and legal advice in terms of dealing with this issue. We also have a monitoring evaluation which we try to get off the ground, and this one is supposed to be able to give us to understand the impact that MISA is doing in the municipalities over time, but also build the capacity for municipalities to also monitor and evaluate what they are doing, because that's one of the weaknesses that we have identified in terms of dealing with it. Then in terms of the technical support program, as I indicated that I will give more detail later. This is the slide that starts talking to what are we doing per program that we have in MISA. In terms of technical, what we are saying is that we have 92 municipalities that we have gone through and worked with their mayors, councillors, spent days trying to build integrated support plans, and those support plans have been identified and they have been finalized. And these are part of the 108 municipalities that we have prioritized as part of the LG Town Support. And we're currently implementing the findings that are contained in this integrated support plan through the PSPs that we have and through our engineers that are deployed in municipalities. And in this regard, what we are saying that we also use the ISPs, as we call them, to try to integrate what we are doing with what other role players are doing. But it's also important that MISA on its own is not going to turn around municipalities. remind us challenges that are infrastructure issues, challenges that are electricity-related issues, then they get affected by the institutional issues and the political issues in the municipality. So the integration then starts making us to approach the municipality as a whole to make sure that we turn around the institution so that the institution is able to perform. And in terms of this program, we have about 77 technical experts. Those are engineering, and they are planning professionals, and they are deployed in 107 municipalities. Now, when there are 77 deployed in 107, it may mean that maybe one expert supports two or three, and so on, because some of these skills are very expensive. So we need to try to maximize the little that we have. And over and above the 77 technical experts, we have 25 professional service providers. These are companies that I indicated earlier that they are currently assisting municipalities with highly technical work. One of the issues that is bothering all of us, and I think it also starts talking to the three basic electricity issues. Without necessary infrastructure, there will always be people who are not accessing free basic services. So you can only get free basic electricity if there's network in your area and there's electricity around. So a part of PSPs, we use them to then come up with the master plan that will start provide our settlements throughout the country, even in rural areas, to then start indicating to us, for us to get infrastructure in terms of electricity, what is needed in terms of bulk, articulation, and how much it will cost over time. So our PSPs are currently doing that work, and we have a number of projects that are supporting the electricity program in that regard. I will show some of those numbers in the slides to come. The approximately 922 municipal infra projects currently are being supported through the expert and through the PRPs, and those projects vary in terms of whether it's water, roads, electricity, and so on. You can see those projects, the numbers in terms of what we are doing as part of our support to these municipalities. In terms of the sector and the grant support, in this regard we have 24 districts. Now when we talk 24 districts, we have about 21 of the 24 districts. These 21 are water service authorities. They provide water to around 107 municipalities. And over and above that, there are other three districts that were elevated by cabinet. In this regard, we're talking about Kaipinis, Christine. We're talking Ekanze in Mpumalanga and the John Taulo in Northern Cape. And they make a total of 24. But over and above that, we have now added another five districts where you have places that are affected by mining activities, where we need to support even the challenges that social challenges that affect these people. So we are working with these districts. In this regard, as far as water sector is concerned, we have now have the backlog for water in this country, working with the Department of Water Affairs. That shows the backlog per settlement and also categorize that backlog, whether the backlog is related to infrastructure or the backlog is related to the infrastructure that is not functional, or the backlog is for extension for new settlements, or it's related to the bulk. That work has now been finalized. What we are doing now is to try to align the programs now, which is your MIG, regional bulk infrastructure, municipal water infrastructure grant, and the other funding, to align this now to make sure that we deal with the backlogs that have been identified. We are working with Dr. Barnard to try to do the same for the energy sector. And I think maybe when we get invited in the next round, we'll be able to provide progress in that regard. And then we're also doing a lot of work on the waste management. One of the issues that is challenging in the waste management is where municipalities don't have the integrated waste management plan. Well, obviously, that is one of the root causes that affect municipalities not to be able to collect. If you look at the State South Africa Information, of all the sectors that we have, I think the waste management is lagging behind. And I think we are investing a lot of resources, the money, to try to help the department to catch up with the challenges that they are facing. And in this regard, we also have the issues of licensing of landfill sites. We've got so many sites in this country that are not licensed. Actually, when we were working with the DG Twink ago, he was saying the minister has given had the ultimatum to try to make sure that we deal with the issue of licensing in no time. And in this regard, this year we had committed for Minister that we'll do 10 help municipalities to license 10 landfill sites because of the resources that we have. But our CEO has now committed that we can increase the 10 to about 25. Then we'll do 35. And they are doing about 15. So I think this time financially, both ourselves and that department will be able to do more than 40 municipalities. And that obviously will help us. And going forward, I think we'll always keep on increasing so that we can catch up with that backlog. Project management support on the waste project through technical consultants and through PSPs, that work is happening. And specifically, we have that for Eastern Cape Free State. And those are the municipalities that we are currently assisting with regard to that. In terms of the energy sector, as I indicated, MISA currently is the member of the Minya Dam steering committee. And this is the steering committee that is trying to assist about 9 municipalities that have been identified by the Department of Energy for the piloting of the Adam program. And currently, as we were talking with them, we realized that some of these municipalities are actually struggling to even put a business plan so that they can get this money. And that means that we have now committed that we're going to work with all the 9 so that in no time we get these business plans. And they should comply with what the steering committee is looking for. And that will help them to keep their money. But over and above that, we have a number of projects that we are doing that are also aimed at supporting the ADAM. And in this regard, as I indicated, we have municipalities where we are reviewing, updating, and also developing new master plans where the master plans are not there. But we also do the operations maintenance plans for a number of municipalities. The issues of electricity loss and revenue management strategies. We have a number of municipalities that we are assisting with regard to that as part of supporting the ADAP program. And then, as I indicated, in terms of the capacity building program, which is part of our capacity development unit, we have currently 228, sorry, we have about 228 Section 13 undergraduate or unemployed, and 83 Section 28 municipal employees. Now, the definitions of section and which section, we have our Honorable Mr. Ngai, who had the program, and when that time comes, we will also try to delegate for him to deal with that. But the Section 13, I think these are people who are young graduates from FET colleges, where you take them through a program which will result with them getting artisan trade tests for various trades. And then in terms of Section 28, these are the ones that are already in municipalities. They are already at employment, but we then also help them to get the trade test for various trades in terms of their areas of work. And the total of 114 advertisers have passed their trade test and exited the program as qualified artisans. We also have just now started a program where we are targeting all these 114, because the question is that when they pass, where do they go? So we have now a program where we are trying to target this and try to get them back to municipalities. And then a total of 416 apprentices, including the current 311 and 158 new recruit apprentices, will be placed in about 56 municipalities. And you can see the magnitude of the numbers in terms of developing the capacity. And we are also aiming to have 100 municipal engineering professionals to be mentored until they get professional registrations with the EXA or professional bodies. And then in this regard, we also give about 91 students in terms of the bursary, and those students are currently studying as we're talking. In terms of our relationship with DBSA, we are working very well with DBSA because we know DBSA coordinates six. Which is the thing that is looking at the rural type of municipalities. As you know, MINSA's focus is more on the rural, under-capacitated municipalities. and we are working with the DTSA through a working group that meets every quarter, and we tend to work together and learn from each other and also try to improve our support based on what each one of us is supposed to do. And then we're also supporting the 6-7, which is the integrated urban space municipalities. Here it talks about 12 large cities in South Africa. We try to also doing a lot of work in it. And the 6-8 that deals with the green energy, and we, as I indicated, we just now started working with the colleagues on energy, and that obviously will give us impetus to try to understand a number of issues that means I can also support the department to achieve what is 6-8. And then we also have the 6-10, which is talking to the electricity transmission, the issue of bulk water, which is 6-18, we're also doing some work in those areas. And then the issues of our dam, I think, the honorable members, honorable chair, I think you will be familiar with this slide in terms of the challenges that we have to deal with regard to asset management issues in the municipalities. Actually, this morning we saw also a newspaper article that says Parliament was told about serious challenges with regard to electricity, asset management, operations, bank loss, the issues that you alluded to earlier, Shepherdson. And in terms of the role of MISA in the ADAM, we have a number of engagements that we have, particularly in conjunction with ESCOM. We are doing a lot of work because we have this program that is called BAM, Business Adopt a Municipality. This program is trying to then say, let's get businesses to then offer themselves to say, if business in private sector is working very well and our municipalities are struggling, let's adopt some of the municipalities so that after time these municipalities will have learned a lot of lessons in terms of operating their business going forward. And in this regard, for the energy sector, we have a partnership with ESCOM, and in this regard we are targeting about 27 municipalities so that we can deal with issues of maintenance and rehabilitation of existing infrastructure, increase investment in new and existing infrastructure, need to address high non-technical electricity losses, revenue management and tariff setting, technical skills development. As you would know, ESCOM has got an academy that also tries to develop technical skills. And we are working very closely, and ESCOM has come on board and supporting this municipality. These are some of the municipalities that have been prioritized through the BAM program, which is that adopted municipality, where ESCOM is playing a major role in terms of supporting them. And this is the menu of support that we have agreed with ESCOM in terms of what we need to do in these municipalities. And then, obviously, there are issues that I think we felt that we need to share with the honorable members portfolio committee on energy, which is a very important issue. And in this regard, I think it's important to also note that the PICC, the management committee, they took a decision that all capital equipment for electricity distribution system, we're talking about new build or the maintenance equipment, as well as the electricity connections, should then be centrally procured through ESCOM. And this obviously will ensure financial savings, actually not just financial savings, substantial financial savings to the state, and also will ensure that we accelerate the electrification program, particularly the ILEM. On the 16th of August 2013, our COPTA MINMEC also discussed the matter, and they recommended and support the FEICC decision. And in this regard, we are working on the modalities to make sure that we deliver on this program. And then in conclusion, I think it's important that we need to share with the members that improvement in the management of distribution infrastructure as far as electricity is concerned is critical for the sustainable supply of electricity. And also MISA is looking at ways of strengthening its overall support to municipalities on electricity supply and other key sectors. And I think that is very, very important. And we also saying that COGTA has got a role to play, particularly in terms of the coordination with the energy department and issues of the provision of free basic electricity. I think as I did here, and my colleague is passionately talking about free basic electricity, and we realize that I think we're really going to work hard to make sure that we meet their challenges as far as our mandate is concerned. I think that will be done. We would like to thank the Chairperson for the opportunity given. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Nisa. It's putting us in a better light. One takes note of the expression of confidence to ESCOM in particular, for it to shoulder, as if it doesn't have enough. Maybe its shoulders are broadening. One of the members that should facilitate procurement centrally. Hopefully that would help in terms of new build and maintenance as well as connection. Maybe you should indicate to us what you mean electricity connection. What who's going to be procured there? But obviously also the fact that there are certain areas that are really covered more the collaboration, especially on the SIPs. We're very keen to hear that. Suppose we could get a little bit more detailed in that area. That would be very helpful. Anyway, I have members. Over to you. Peresla.
Maybe we must think about the Department of Cooperative Government on the area in COVID-19 and Lisa now for this enlightening development within our government. More and more it's becoming clear that there is neither is working program. What it is was only pertaining to 2012, in May, and between May and now, already created a lot of work that shows a determination to take us towards sustainable development in human expansion. Questions that one may ask would be more just of clarity questions. Some of them I wrote and they got answered as the presentation went on. But on slide five makes reference to the mandate. And the question I have asked there was whether this mandate would include monitoring and evaluation. That it is put there in the notes on the presentation. On slide 5. But when you come to slide 8, NISA is in the process of developing a system that will ensure effective monitoring and optimization of the performance of municipal infrastructure. It means in other words, there is that element in the mandate. Not sure if it could not be read as a mandate, but if that is a program. I might just be clubbing on that particular area. And on the same slide 8, as you spoke to the first bullet, slide 8, page 4. I became very excited as to where we were talking to the capacity development program. That shows capacity developed in local government. Because we in a true sense, in a practical sense, we have a lot of problems related to capacity to deliver in local government. But this takes me to another question, bigger than just talking to electricity infrastructure and the issue of energy to the poor. And these questions, I had them even earlier, unfortunately we did not have sufficient time to look for them. The issue of the role of COPTA in sanctioning or its ability in terms of the law to can deal with disciplinary measures in respect of a training ministry. The power of that department, both provincially and nationally, to can deal with these particular issues. Because, Chairperson, I think you will agree with me that, as you said it earlier, that we are a constitutional government, we have laws. People not abiding laws cannot try and put government laws by any means. But if you look at what is basically happening in local government, that when you were trying to get some of the things, people were threatening to take life. It cannot be allowed. That what power does the department have when they see this type of court to take action against such people? Because a lot of municipalities are just home for the crime, for criminals. People do just as they wish to. They defy government, they defy their own political parties, they do as they please. And it looks like there is no defense or defense from top that is able to come and say, oh, not in South Africa, you cannot do so. They seem to be that independent school that is not part of us. And my question is that, do we have to change the law, or do you currently have the law providing you with the necessary power which you are not using to deal with that issue? And this is not a question to MISA today, but if MISA in its infrastructure program, if this particular kind of power does not exist, will experience problems in ensuring that the infrastructure development takes place in the municipality. And that will be, I think, the main thing due to political and administrative capacity. On slide 14 makes reference to 8 provinces. And of course, they are not mentioned here for us to know which ones are they. Just to say which one is not here. Which one is not part of this, and why is it not part of this, and what actions can be taken to make it to be part of that. I think those are the few questions here for them. I hope they are not difficult questions. They are just questions for RBC, but the presentation is quite a very well-informed presentation, mind-boggling, and giving us hope into the future. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Sal. Prof, followed by Snowboard.
Thank you, Chair. Just a few technical questions. I should also appreciate the presentation. It really is enlightening. On slide 7, Municipal Technical Support Program to ensure that MISA provides technical support to those municipalities that require assistance. I hope I can interpret that to mean it is them who know that they don't know and ask for assistance. There's a way of identifying them and assisting them. Slide 8, the defense bullet. When we are referring there to capacity, it implemented through various programs, including apprenticeship and professional student professional learning, I really thought of this structure called South African Graduate Development Agency, SAGDA, which goes all out there to get the profiles of all the unemployed. I was just curious to know whether you as a structure are linked to that, because they get these people unemployed, they want them to. I also share my experience, my constituents, when I got a graduate who graduated for BCom General at 14, 1998. 15 years later, he had not yet had money to get his career, so he's jumping. He was so frustrated, he went back to school to do teaching. Even as a teacher, he still got around as a temporary teacher. The last position was in June, where he was a temporary teacher. I'm just talking about the reality, how terrible have been people out. On your slide 9, you refer to a total of 92 municipalities. Coming from our own account, in many of your slides, you have given up as to who these are. Well, truly, I've heard of my constituent is not part of that. I take you to slide 18. In slide 18, when you were dealing with that slide, you referred to 9 municipalities. Unfortunately, those 9 municipalities again are not given. That is slide 18. I leave it. Because I saw a thousand of them, I don't know which are the 9. Let me take you to following slide 14. Slide 14, the very last bullet. Through our bursary program intended to benefit students in the federal field, it has sponsored 91. Again, my curiosity was, how do you get those? And of course, when you go out there, when you talk bursary, you really only think of NSY. Whenever there are other battles out there where our students can have an access, we become curious, how do you get this 91? Do you go to where they are already there in SAT colleges, or is there a way of accessing it? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine is on slide 10, where the presenter spoke about 77 technical engineers who are allocated to 107 municipalities. And how are they going to help these municipalities? Because the number of the municipalities is far more than the people, the technical people, engineers. So I just wanted to know, perhaps I did not get you quite clearly what you said. Can you just elaborate a little? Then the other one is, seeing that we're talking about electricity, I don't know whether this will get over well with you. I just want to know about a municipality who does not go with the plan, who gets his own contractor to do electricity, which does not go with the ESCOM plan. Is there any way you can help these people? I'm speaking about a municipality in my constituency where they did this, and now people it's been electrified, but no lighting, and people are up in arms now. So we just want to go there and help, and I don't know how to help. Perhaps you can help me, so that when I go there, I must know exactly what you think to the slide 12, I think.
Yes, on slide 12, the sector grants about the reviews of the developed a master plan for energy in areas of Zualeti. I see the areas of Zualeti is my municipality there. If there is, I just want to know, what are you doing with it? Have you helped them? Also, I saw Elias Mitzvah again with the waste management there, because there's one thing which I was asking myself on Sunday. The landfill is right at the main road, and when there's wind, all the rubbish comes into the street and really very untidy for people, especially tourists going past asking what's happening to South Africa. Thank you.
Can I throw in a few myself? A little bit on the regulatory side. NALSA receives applications from you, from municipalities, isn't it? I hope the doctor is listening as well. For increases in tariffs or licensing at a term, but particularly on increases that have to be above the approved guide or levels. For refurbishment, for maintenance of networks and all of that. We are interested, I'm interested that if you could share with what I suppose you share with NAFA as well, in any case, the list of municipalities that would be within the radar. I assume that means that that's one of the areas we'd be looking into. That which municipalities will be provided grants, then that you will support, obviously. I know you don't give out the money. Within the current financial year, next financial year, or within MTF, if there's anything in that space. The third area is, given that, if I'm accurate, municipalities are required to spend 6% of their total revenue on repairs and maintenance. I assume, Mr. Ben, is supposed to assist municipalities within that financial resource. Now, the issue of monitoring comes in, whether it's MISA, whether it's DECOCTA. We'll be very, very interested, I'm sure honorable members will support me that as to how we would like to see how we can share that information. But of course, we know that some spend less than the 6%, you know, so that we can aid with them. I know, once again, that's why Falka should have been around. I know Falka has stood his ground and explained a couple of things, which is fine. But I think for us to meaningfully and productively engage on this matter, is to get the data now, which municipalities are spending less than, are spending 4%, 3%, 5%, 6%, maybe. We shouldn't be proud to speak about those, but the 2, 3, 4%, you know, category, you know. Then, maybe you can sample that in future and say, what makes the problem, or still, maybe, raised through SALC. So it's a little bit broad, numbers. But, surely, you know, the entry of this minister now, is triggering us to think seriously about this, because you are there to actually, you know, strengthen that, because we cannot afford to allow the, once we even have many other, we cannot afford to allow the rehabilitation backlog to increase. And one of the reasons of stemming the backlog is to be really robustly engage and discuss these different commitments. You know, how do we ensure that the hemorrhage is minimized. I'm sure then that's why we'll be thinking very seriously about the technical age, so that these things are not just handled through paperwork, but also electronically.
so that we have early warning system. Much as I admire that you indicated that you are engaged in certain 6, 7, 8, 10, 18. There's nothing to put on the table at this stage. One was interested to know how much are you, I mean, what are the specifics, you know, which areas or in what way are you interested, are you keen to engage with the state? Because they are very, very bulky. The capacity building program is also an attraction for us because at some stage we did engage with various institutions around skills development in the energy sector. And we learned a lot of things, your CETAs, your FET colleges, your ESCOMs, the municipal engineers, and a lot of particular CETAs. And if we just run through a speed as to how we intend to engage with FET colleges and CETAs. And about the CETA on a level, because within the concept and the practice of CETA, we then capture the private sector, without necessarily going straight to the private sector, to the exclusion of the CETA, because CETA practice itself integrates the private sector, which is one of the Achilles heels, you know, when it comes to skill development. So, I mean, enter MESA, we're quite excited to see how this young kid going to bring and sweep the broom with a new broom and a little bit cleaner. Are you preparing yourselves? In terms of capacity building, skill development in particular, what's your take on sweep? I'm raising this because sweeps are major, very, very, very major and substantial in terms of their size. And, you definitely need to get your engineers and everything, you know, ahead of time. I mean, to train an artisan, fine. Technician, yes. You need a couple of years' experience, but you know, with engineers, and there's an NDC called Sun Hub, honorable members. This is where I learned the crunch of it becomes skill development in the country. You know, they showed me the ratio between an engineer, technician, and artisan. But also the rate of production is of those levels compared to the rate of demand in terms of the renewable energy procurement of the health, the nuclear building, and it comes in, and a whole host of other things. So that's why I'm provoking you. If you haven't, but please think first about it, because the system to me are going to be quite major. And a good example is the concentrated solar, park in Briska, Arlington. I mean, 5,000 megawatts in that area with a university campus in Uppington, campus. Yeah. And I don't know how big is the energy college there. Definitely have to go, you know, have to get your skill preparation done ahead of time. Would municipalities be any role in that? What would be your take, or am I far-fetched? It just comes in my mind, but also there's the need of collaboration as well. In any case, I think also I'm interested in terms of this. If you could share some more information on business adopter municipality program, and which municipalities specifically are you referring to in page 10, slide 20, who are part of phase one? Would like to monitor that. Really like to monitor that. Or is it one in page 21? But you can help, you know. But the interest is in detail, you know, that stuff that you can monitor. Once you've raised a couple of interesting areas, unless I missed it, one is also interested in the INEP space, particularly what I would regard as rural municipalities.
China penetration, the electrification program penetrated South Africa quite substantially, but we keep on getting indications that once it comes to the rural hinterland, there's a slowdown or still some deficiency. Notwithstanding, obviously, that there's sparse population or in terms of democracies or whatever, but that's just one area of interest. Sorry, there's a long list there. We're going to round up now. What about a thought of looking into areas such as energy efficiency? Maybe also that also triggers an area that in terms of your support when it comes to the energy sphere, do you take the initiative to suggest or the weaker municipalities to come up with their needs and challenges? Now I'm raising energy efficiency because with the crunch and the demand on electricity at this stage in time, one of the low-hanging fruits that we have on the members is energy efficiency, because the more efficient you use, the very electricity that you are generating, the more helpful it is. That has been highlighted in various states, and in fact, I expect some help on that. I see also you make reference to things like waste management, and there's an emerging practice with some municipalities, but of course the big ones are already engaged in quite intensively, that is waste to energy or waste to electricity generation. Those are the things that come in mind, but not much emphasis on that. The emphasis is mainly in this regard, the energy efficiency aspect. Thank you very much. Over to both Lisa and Copter.
So they have called in the last two chairperson so that when they cover, they cover everything. The constitution, chairperson, I think it's not my view, it is fact. It's an act of parliament. And if an act of parliament is giving problems, it's important that the committees of parliament are briefed by those who should implement the act, what problems this act is giving, so that they can consider these as not able to lead to the need for a constitutional amendment, which we can do. Now, from these two presentations, it's clear that there are constitutional imperatives that block them from being able to do certain things in our developmental process. I would suggest, Chairperson, that this be, together with others that the department might have, be put maybe in writing in response to both this committee and to the COCTA portfolio committee, so that they can be discussed and we can see how far we can be able to go with them or bypass them or be able to use other ways of implementing in the presence of those particular sections of the Constitution. The other question, Chairperson, is the issue of the municipality revenues. It was raised, I think, in the first presentation that what about municipalities which do not have revenue? And I know there was a debate that was emanating from COCTA some time ago. I'm not sure how far that debate goes. Which was talking about demarcation, that with municipal boundaries can be looked at to be such that each municipality has got a tax base. Whether that kind of a discussion is still going on, and there is a discussion also that is currently, I think, in the public arena around the establishment of a single public service. I think that one is on the public administration, but its impact goes obviously to linking the local government public service to the entire public service and has an impact on COCTA. Now, the issue of the revenue versus the demarcation versus the public service if you can be able to give us more information about the current thinking around that development, because there is a development. And part of the challenges is that some municipalities do not have revenue at all. They depend on the grants.
Okay, over to you, Ms. Ancocta.
No,
I think you've already answered my question there. Very good.
No, thanks, Chair and honorable members. There's nothing like a free lunch here. So the colleagues will have to take responsibility for according to their to some of these questions. I will.
So that's why you had a big team.
I will ask Mr. Oloko to respond to some questions. Mr. Danda, he has some questions. Mr. Mai has many questions around capacity building. In fact, we will also even go as far as sharing with you some of the initiatives that we've already started that haven't been captured here, that talk to some of the questions that you've raised, such as your FETs and your CETAs. I think he will certainly share on those. And then there's the issues around the SIPs. Mr. Matata will speak to those, and I will just come at the end and conclude from our side. That's good luck.
I don't remember you helping us with your name, because there was that complication as well.
Because it didn't slip my mind when I started. I will say my name very slowly. My name is Kwatelani Morongo.
Diana.
Hello. Thank you, Chair. So I can continue. I think the first question on the issue of the mandate, whether it includes the monitoring and evaluation. So the monitoring and evaluation function is a function of currently for the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Matters. MISA, obviously, in terms of the work that it's doing, it must also monitor and report also to Parliament, and also the impact of the support. Because these municipalities, after a period of time, we need to see them operating at a certain level. So we need to check the impact of our program. But we also, as part of monitoring and evaluation, support to support municipalities to be able to monitor their own infrastructure issues, because that's where we have a lot of gaps in terms of challenges that relate to infrastructure. If a municipality is unable to monitor what is happening, so I think that cannot be right. So we help them to put systems so that they can help check and balance it as part of the technical assistance that we provide. And currently we have a program that is currently trying to help with that, so that we can even look at the system in terms of the IT system, so that they are able to get information. It would be a good thing one day when an honorable mayor sitting in the office able to see in the system what is happening in the jurisdiction of the municipality as far as infrastructure is concerned. So if we can get a lot of funding, I think that's one area that we, at least as part of supporting them, that we are looking at. So but in terms of monitoring local government performance, issues of that in terms of the Section 46 of the Systems Act, that role is resides with provinces and also the Department of Cooperative Government. But we do monitor in terms of what is happening. We also assist the MIC. We have a grant called Municipal Infrastructure Grant. We also have the people who are managing it in the department to also improve their monitoring. So it's one area that we do as part of our grant support in the system. There was a slide
there's a question that talks about the capacity development. I think Mr. Mihai, as Mr. Mashawe indicated, will deal with that. And then there was a question about the slide number 14. The slide number 14 that was trying to say there's a reference of 8 provinces and which provinces are these. And also, I think Mr. Mai will deal with that one. The one that talks to the what do we do to municipalities that fail? It's a very difficult one. But there's currently legislative provision where when municipalities or administrations are failing, they then go to other administrations. Can be done by the MEC, it can be done also by the minister, the section 139 of the constitution.
But a brother of mine is doing his master's on the deficiencies of section 139. Just keep that in mind. Carry on. I certainly appreciate about that one. Yes, there are serious issues about section 139.
And part of reference, Chair, you can also refer him to me, I think I will end
that. That's
so okay. And then in terms of slide number 7, I think it was the same question of trying to identify the municipalities that we are trying to assist that are mentioned and so on. So I think the colleague, I think it came back and I will do that. So number 8, in terms of graduate agency, I think Mr. Mnai, you will deal with that. Total number of 92 municipalities, so it's a different space, but only about one of the municipalities are being supported. How is it being done? And as I was presenting, I was saying, sometimes you have a situation where one expert is shared, like, we put this expert in a district. So some of these experts are very expensive. So, but this expert has got a role maybe 1-2 days in a particular local municipality. And then another 2 days in another municipality. And other days in another municipality. So it's just sharing arrangement where you have maybe one supporting a different number of municipalities. I think the slide number 18 that is also trying to understand which municipalities are those. Some of them I think can, because I have them in my computer, some of them can just mention them. Maybe after I responded to them, I will try to open that so that I can get it for the members. And then the next question, in terms of slide number 12, in terms of what we are doing in Elias Mutuality, in Elias Mutuality, we are assisting them to develop the waste management, the integrated plan. Because I think when you have the landfill site in a wrong place, it then means that the planning was wrong. So we are dealing with this now, this planning part, to make sure that the landfill site, because when you put a landfill site, you need to have looked at a number of issues. How your town is going to grow and where is it going? And how do you integrate with the other municipalities in the jurisdiction? We're currently having a project where we are helping them to put a good plan that will try to deal with that. Now, if maybe when we finish this plan, it indicates that landfill site needs to be relocated. So we also have a program where we help them to rehabilitate. Because to rehabilitate is very expensive. So we also have a program where we assist them through the rehabilitation processes, and but the municipality must also come on board, because it is their role, it is their responsibility. So that is the issue on the Elias Mutuality. I think the issue of the tariff is a very challenging issue, and I think it also relates to the issue that was raised with regard to cross-subsidization. Because we found that in many municipalities, when they collect money as part of electricity sales, they also have to use this money for other sectors and so on. And one key challenge, and this is the challenge that we have faced, and we're trying to figure out how can we assist municipalities that are currently owing
something that we are trying to look at. Now, we are also looking at this issue of the mini ADAP to say maybe we can partner with energy and ESCOM and try to see how can we influence this municipality to behave in a different way through this grant that we have. So, but it's a challenge, but from MISA's point of view, we are trying to say we are identifying some of them just as a pilot to understand, particularly in the state, what is causing them not to pay for bulk electricity. Now, the municipality that is unable to buy bulk from ESCOM, it's very difficult to then use the, whichever tariff that they are setting for the skills and all the other requirements. Because bulk is a continuity. Next month you're not going to distribute electricity if you don't buy it. But you buy this and sell. For them, when we ask them, we find that what they receive from the people is even much higher than the amount of the quota amount in terms of the bulk. But they have a huge debt. And some of these municipalities are big municipalities. I mean, if you look at the city of Matlosan in the northwest, look at Emalafien in Mpumalanga. So they are good municipalities in terms of revenue collection. But we have that challenge. And I think it's something that together with NERSA and ESCOM, Honorable Chair, we need to look at it seriously so that we can assist. Because it's a challenge. And we feel that our role from MISA point of view is to make those municipalities to comply with the NERSA requirements and to comply with the requirements of the department. And I think we look at that issue seriously, Honorable Chair. In terms of the specific, in terms of what you're doing in the fifth. Now, if you look at the six, we're looking at the projects that are in rural municipalities. Now, when we put 24 districts, the 24 districts have got all districts. When we support these 24 districts, we are actually supporting the 6. Then 680, which is the water, hard water, is the one that I was talking about that we have put now together a backlog analysis of water affairs that we are now currently implementing. And then 6-7 is the one that deals with the big cities, Polokwane, Mbombela, Solblaki, and the metro. So together they make the 6-7. They are 12 in number. So there's a lot of work that we're doing. The Solblaki is now part of ADAM, the mini ADAM program. So it's also a beneficiary municipality in that regard. So in Nelson Mandela, we have deployed technical experts. In Buffalo City, together with the National Treasury Program of Support, we are also helping them in that regard. So there's a lot of work, but PRASA is playing a major role in terms of coordinating that field. But sometimes when you see some of these municipalities, like Lucas, when they call us and say, no, we need a technical expert, we are struggling as a municipality. But this is a big municipality. This municipality can afford a technical expert. But because it's only that time period, they say, no, we're going to do it only for 6 months. And we have now also helped them in that regard. Russian Bank, we're helping them big time. We have a project that they are saying we must come and help them to close down the landfill site as part of our waste management. So those are the specific, but the SIPs, all the SIPs, also the outcome, they are part of this number of municipalities that we're talking about. In terms of maybe the number of the names of the real municipalities, I think the members can allow us to forward that maybe after this meeting, so that we can give more details in terms of the work that we're doing there. And then I think the next question, what are we doing on the INEP? Obviously, this is part of our grant support, and we realize that the INEP is not a big allocation. The particular the one that goes to small municipalities. But our role, we feel that it must also try to help EFCO in terms of dealing with those rural municipalities. So there are municipalities that have requested us that they equally don't have electricity master plan. So then we say, let's go and do this master plan. And then let's see what this master plan says. Because that's where you will start getting the answer in terms of how do we get to deeper rural areas without bulk, what is required, and so on and so on. So there are a number of municipalities, particularly in Mpumalanga. I think in Mpumalanga we are actually in the process of completing some of the master plan. So I think there was a slide that it just didn't put it in here, where it was showing also where we are doing master plans
in the rural Eastern Cape and so on. But I think it will also help in terms of the investment with regard to the INEM program. So, but those ones who are struggling with capacity to even spend the INEM, and we are saying the Department of Energy, now that we are now starting working together, talk to us and we are available, we have engineers, we can also talk to engineers and deal with the challenge. But you will find that in most instances, the understanding won't be caused by the fact that you don't have an engineer. It has internal processes, machine making, and those type of things that need to be dealt with. And we have a separate support that we just talked about. But the municipality that has got serious administrative issues, we put it in special support and then agree with the leadership to allow us to play major roles so that we can take you out of the and in that regard we find that we start working very well with the municipalities. I'm trying to look at the issue of the revenue. I think some of the issues are very strategic and they need our CEO. The issue of the work that was done with regard to the policy work of whether we need to have a district or what, how can we demarcate them. Because I feel that work was still in the pipeline, but I think the leadership will have to deal with that. Thank you very much. Please.
Thanks, Colin.
Okay. Then I'm just going to respond to a few items that I picked up when questions were asked. Just to give some input on O&M and also with regard to the 6% budget that municipalities or the
O&M being operations and maintenance.
Oh, sorry. yes, operations and maintenance. Yeah. It is true, municipalities, they don't utilize the revenue that they generate from electricity tariffs for the purposes of operations and maintenance. And during our diagnostic exercise, which we undertook as NISA, that we picked up as one of the areas of concern. And after that exercise, then we identified a need to assist municipalities with the development of asset management plans. And of course, linked to that was also the issue of the development of O&M plans. Because through the asset management plan, then we look into the asset registers. And as you may notice or know, that most of the municipalities have had a poor rating when it comes to the Auditor General because of a lack of asset registers, which are GRAP compliant. And as Mr. we've identified this as an area for us to assist municipalities to develop the asset registers within the whole spectrum of asset management. And linking that with operations and maintenance plan, because out of the asset registers, then municipality is able to deal with issues of operations and maintenance. Now, that also helps them even when it comes to budgeting, because they'll be understanding the life cycle operations of their assets. So we help them as well to deal with issues of budgeting. And the reason why we do that, it is so that once they understand the nature of maintenance requirements, so that they don't find themselves into reactive type of maintenance, because that's why they do their own budget. They just react to emergencies that come on maintenance. So out of the exercise of doing budget as part of their O&M implementation, then the plan is that they should link this with their service delivery budget implementation plan, the SDP, so that there is pre-planning with regard to operations and maintenance of the assets, so that they avoid a situation whereby they just react. So we believe that this will strengthen that. And of course, if this is part of the service delivery budget implementation plan, it means then it would have council approval, and then the municipality will then be expected, of course, to implement that as part of their budget implementation plan in a particular financial year. So we've done this exercise in this financial year of 2013, and we're still in that process, and we anticipate that in the next financial year, then they'll be able to implement these things. And also, let me just make some input on promoting energy efficiency. And Mr. Bolo has spoken about the development of energy master plans, because that to a certain extent also will help the municipality
in planning for the provision of electricity within their areas. But I think also the issue of asset management plan also will contribute in assisting the municipality to deal with deficiencies that are there in them providing electricity to communities. I think those are the areas that I picked up, unless maybe there is one or two that I've omitted. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a quite number of questions to respond to. Let me start with the issue of the eight provinces. The program of artisan development was inherited from DSA when MISA was established. They were dealing with only eight provinces, excluding Gauteng. But in this current financial year, we have included Gauteng as the member. The reason of exclusion was that the Department of Cooperative Governance in Gauteng had its own program of urban development at that particular time. So that's why it was left out. The other question is on Basel, which is a quite big problem for us as MISA. Currently, as it is indicated, we've got 91 students in various institutions of higher learning. Our focus in terms of trades are the civil engineering and electrical engineering. We are looking at expanding it to include the GIS and property values because we find them as very attractive and important for this industry. The approach that we took is that we advertise nationally, but we also use our website as often to advertise the batteries. But further than that, we also use the provinces, we use the Department of Cooperative Governance in various provinces, and we use the business unit for infrastructure to further disseminate information on our batteries. On the issue of the CETAs and our relationship, we are working with CETAs, but I must indicate that our focus in terms of capital building came from the mandate of MISA, from the establishment of MISA, is we are focusing on technical capacity building so that we respond to the issues of infrastructure. So we work with all CETAs, but our focus are the CETAs that deal with different trades in technical capacity quality. The following three sectors are very important for us, and we have developed MOUs with them, which is the energy and water sector. Just a week ago, we're signing an SLA with them with a funding of 12.5 million focusing on wastewater and water process controllers that we are training in terms of the trade. The second CETA is the local government CETA, which is a very important partner for us. We have established the MOU. We haven't signed it, just sitting with the two COOs of these various CETAs. I think the delay was that the CETA was put in administration, but we've had an engagement with the administrator of that CETA. The focus towards the CETA is on urban development. That is their interest also with the Minister of Education. So we are looking at partnering with them in rolling out the urban development program. And the skill set that we focus on is electrical, your plumbers, and partly the civil engineering. The other CETA is the MAS CETA, which is also focusing on electrical and biodiesel mechanics. And we have an MOU also with this particular CETA, and it also assists us in registering our artisan before they start the program, because the requirement is that they have to be registered with
us. If you could just summarize over our time.
On engineers, it is true, Chair, it takes 20 years to produce just one engineer. That is why our focus will be right from the student level, where we put them at universities, then we put them to our program, which is experiential learning,
and also assisting them with monitoring towards the registration. We have already signed an MOU with the ECSA, Engineering Council of South Africa. We are also working with FIT colleges as public institutions. We signed MOUs with three already, the Mfolo College, the Serela College, and we are finalizing one with Amajuba College, because that's where we use them for training and track testing of our apprentices. We also have signed, in the process of signing, the MOU with the University of Technology on the certificate that will assist the municipal employees who are in the technical department, and we are in the process of finalizing the certificate to be rolled out in the next coming financial year. I think those are the issues that we're reaching. Thank you.
No, I think in the interest of time, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, there were some issues that, of course, are comments that need to take into account in our work. But also there are issues that have been raised that would require us to go back and put together the specifics or specific information around the issues that were raised. And we will await the next opportunity. Of course, the information that we'll provide, we'll send it to the committee, but we will await the next opportunity that the committee will provide us to engage further in terms of progress when the committee is ready to attend to the committee. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much. Thanks very much, Honourable Members, before the provision gets completely completed. One thing one has learned today is that one wanted to look at three basic electricity, three basic alternative electricity, INEP, vis-a-vis, what role we'll be playing, how much SALC was here once again. We've learned a couple of things that it's rather an inherited approach when it comes to municipal levels, because there are a lot of other players that has to come in. We've taken note of some of the challenges that come up, policy and so forth. And I'm sure honourable members, it would be a good idea that when you look even at the minutes, to reflect a little bit and even dive into the other actual issues that would raise us further. But it's helpful that you've given us a broader context and an understanding beyond energy issues when it comes to municipalities' roles in our sphere. Particularly Misa, we're grateful in any case that Misa is bringing up a couple of things without having been able to answer a lot of things, but just keep thinking seriously about things like what I've referred to as the concentrated solar park, because it's painful for people in areas like your Priscilla and Victor to see a lot of skills being important when you know, timely planning could have created an opportunity, particularly for artisans. Maybe technicians, three-year diplomas is some big stuff, but particularly for artisans, you know, that to me is quite rich, you know. And implementation. I can say this on behalf of all members to both the COP and MISA. You definitely will get our support, but please articulate a little bit more crisply what would we like you, would like us to do. But obviously we'll work in conjunction with the relevant portfolio committee across both, when it comes to municipalities in particular, honourable members, both the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces, because the NCOP becomes quite vital, our counterpart in this regard. On that score, thank you very much, honourable members. I'm aware we couldn't touch the other items, but I just feel, you know, it was worth it. It was a big intimidating meeting. It was appropriate that they have visited. That's why we treasure things as much as elaborate as we could. As for now, thank you very much, Mr. Buha, the meeting is done.
I have the Energy Department giving us a study update on what they've researched recently. It's obviously would be an interesting thing. Thank you very much.